Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo, and welcome to episode 1 of The Tech Guy on the Premier Radio Networks, a.k.a. episode 327 of The Tech Guy on KFI. It sounds pretty much the same. It won't be as pretty because we won't have those great KFI promos and bumper music, but the content's essentially the same. This is the feed that I got from Premier, as opposed to the feed we get from KFI. If you'd like to listen to the show live, go to leo.am, and we'll have a list of stations there. I'll keep that up to date. The stations are growing fast, and we've got some exciting new announcements coming down the pike in the next couple of weeks. This is it's going really great. Also, you'll notice at the end, I take a couple of extra phone calls. This is something I'm going to start doing from now on, answering any calls that are still on the board when the show ends, for a couple of reasons. One, those people have held on for quite some time. They deserve an answer. But also so we can have some extra calls in the can, should there be network issues or whatever. So, in other words, we won't have to do the post-taping anymore. We'll just have extra calls lying around on the floor all the time. But I think I'll put them in the podcast, give you a little something extra. What do you say? If you don't want to hear it, just turn it off before those calls. Thanks so much to Premier Radio Networks for making this possible. To my good friends at KFI, they'll always be the mothership. Thanks to you for listening. Now, episode 1.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, will begin at 6 minutes past the hour from Premier Radio Networks.
Well, good day to you, Leo Laporte, and I am the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk high tech. So glad you're here. Want to welcome some new listeners to the show, so I'm going to explain a little bit for those of you who've been listening for a long time. You'll hear some stuff you probably already heard, but there are some new things I want to pass along. For instance, a new phone number. Let me give it to you right now, 888-8-ASK-LEO, 4-8s, then ASK Leo, 888-827-5536. Now, this is a tech show, not a computer show. We talk about everything that has to do with technology. Of course, computers, yes. Vista and Mac and Linux. I'll even talk about XP and 95 and 98 if you make me. And the internet, but MP3 players also, and cell phones and camcorders and digital cameras, home theater, all of the stuff that is in our lives, it's pervasive in our lives, it's changing the way we live and work and play. That's what this show is about. And I love talking about it, and I love taking your calls. So give me a ring. We're going to line up some calls, and we're going to get to the phones in just a second. 888-ASK, 888-8-ASK-LEO, 48-ASK-LEO is the phone number. For those of you who are new to the show wondering, who is this? Who's this guy? Who is this guy on the radio? What's he talking about? Who is he? I've probably been doing this format longer than anybody else currently on the air. Started doing, it was computer talk back then. In 1990, it was Windows 3.0, DOS 6. There was nothing to talk about with the internet. The web was only a year old and nobody knew about it. And I've been doing it almost continuously ever since. In 94, started doing television on the subject as well. First on CNBC. With a show called The Personal Computing Show, then I'm MMS. This is why I could never stay on the show. MSNBC, with a show called The Site. I was, you may remember that show, it was on for 18 months on MSNBC and then canceled because they said the audience size was about the size of a large high school. It was a little early for tech. This is about 96, a little early. I played an animated character on that show called Dev Null. A virtual character. I had to put on a suit with knobs and buttons and sensors on it. And they had a big Silicon Graphics Onyx workstation, $1 million computer hooked up to my tail. Quite literally, I had an electronic tail coming off all those sensors that would monitor my movements. And and turn it into a real life character. I would talk to Soledad O'Brien about technology. That not my finest hour. I won an Emmy for it, but only because there wasn't much competition in the virtual character division. Then we started a tech channel, a cable channel, kind of like the Food Network for Geeks, called Tech TV. You may have seen the shows I did there, The Screensavers and Call for Help. That was 6 years, from 1998 till 2004 I did that. Still do the TV show in Canada and Australia. I say hello to my friends in Canada and Australia listening on the internet. I do a number of podcasts with my old Tech TV friends. That's on twit.tv. But I've been doing this radio thing since 1990, and I love it. So I just want to encourage you to call and ask a question, make a comment. If there's something going on in the world of the internet, or maybe you read an ad you didn't understand, or you'd like to know more about a website or how to do your own thing on the internet, that's the thing I'm really most excited about right now. People creating their own audio and video, their own podcasts, putting video on YouTube. You know, kids today, a kid for very little money can be the next Steven Spielberg. Digital camcorder and an inexpensive computer, and he's got all the tools that cats like Spielberg and Rodriguez had to go into hock for years ago. They had to max their credit cards and get angels. Now you could do it for very little money. Mom and dad can be your angel investor, and there's amazing stuff coming out of high schools now. I'll talk about that if you're interested in getting into it, or maybe you're interested in seeing where it's happening, what it's all about. Maybe you just want to see what kids are doing today. We could talk about where to find it. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We also have a chat room. If you're a fan of chat, or maybe if you never used chat and you'd like to see a little bit more about what's going on, thanks to our friends at DSL Extreme, it's at irc.dslextreme.com. And it's heavily moderated, so don't worry. It's not, you know, your kids can go in there. It's safe. We've got Dan. We've got the troops out today. Dan and Dustin and Illuminati and Mike B and Red Sox Dan and Shuby are all in there moderating, so keeping an eye on things. And you're welcome in there, too. If you don't have software, just go to irc.dslextreme.com on the web. There's a little Java client. If you do, there's explanation on how you can get into that using your specialized IRC client if you prefer. But I think of these guys as the kind of the kids in the back of the room, you know, kind of the wiseacres. But it's also an important job if you're in there, because a lot of times I'll look to you for an answer. Now, I want to say this right up front. And those of you who have been listening to me for some years know this. I don't know everything. I don't even claim to come close. No one can. Anyone who pretends to is either fibbing or delusional. But I will do my best to answer every question. If I don't know, I'll say I don't know. And the good news is we've got this vast audience of people who know everything.
Hey, Leo, there's a server issue, so don't go to break yet.
In between them and the chat room, they know everything. So if there's a question you ask and I say, I don't know, we'll get you the answer almost always before the show's over. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the phone number. I just read an article in the Wall Street Journal that I thought was quite interesting. I've talked about this website before, Zillow.com, Z-I-L-L-O-W, for our Canadian listeners, Z-I-L-L-O-W.com. It's a really cool, fun site. You can go there now if you want. And, you know, by the way, that's one thing. If you're listening to the show, it's always fun to have the computer open and play the home version of our game. Z-I-L-L-O-W.com. It has real estate estimates. You look for your neighborhood. You can see, kind of the fun part is you can see what your neighbors paid for their house. He paid that much? Or in our case, we just had a neighbor sell a house in our neighborhood. And our reaction was, they sold it for that little. They just brought our values down. But Zillow will tell you what its best estimate of what it thinks your house is worth. Now, the Journal did a study of how accurate Zillow is, and surprisingly, it's often very good, they say. They did 100 recent home sales and matching them with the Zillow estimate, or they call it, the Zillow calls it the Zestimate. And it says frequently it's within just a few percentage points of the actual price paid. That's a good sign. But when it blows it, it blows it big. In some cases, well, in one case, off by $2 million. a house in Fall City, Washington. It was a four-bedroom, five-bathroom house. Zillow said worth $661,000. It went for $2.7 million. But see, what it didn't know was it was in a gated community, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes Zillow will miss. But it is a great, fun hobby that I recommend to people who want to spy on their neighbors. The reason this comes up is you combine Zillow with a few other search sites, which I may avoid mentioning just because I want to preserve my own privacy, and you can pretty much put together an amazing profile of everybody in your neighborhood, everybody you know. You don't need their social security number. If you have their address, their zip code, a few personal information, you know, maybe their birthday. I'm not talking identity fraud here. It's just amazing what you can find on the net. Email addresses, phone numbers. I have a little thing on the BlackBerry that I use that does a reverse look. I think it's called Pocket Express from Handmark. It does a reverse lookup. So you put in your address. It'll tell you. It kind of spooked me when I did this. It tells me the names and addresses and phone numbers of all my neighbors. Now, if you're unlisted, it won't show. But pretty much everybody's listed, right? Of all my neighbors. It was very convenient. I added them to my phone book in case I have to call them. All right, I can't resist. The other site is Zaba Search, ZABAsearch.com. And this really should be, if this, I don't, there's no law against it. Boy, if it feels to me like a real invasion of privacy. Between Zillow and Zaba Search, you can know how much your neighbors paid for their house, what kind of car they drive, their email, their phone. You know marketers are using this. You know they are. If you bought a house recently, if you got a mortgage recently, even if you didn't, if you have a mortgage, how much junk mail do you get now? How many phone calls do you get from people trying to give you a refi? Where do you think they find all that? Well, I'll tell you where they find it. Online. It's all public information. That's kind of the problem. It's all out there. Does it make you nervous? 888-8-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. I'm sure there are people making bets how long it takes before I say the wrong phone number or the wrong callers. I do want to really welcome with open arms our newest listeners from Talk Radio 950 KPRC. Good to have you. From News Talk, AM 880, WMEQ, Fox Talk 1360. We're so glad to have you in 1010 KBW. Welcome to the show. Please, don't be shy. Join in. There's also a website, and the reason I put a website on is so that I can quickly go through my answers and, you know, give you URLs without spelling it 14 times, and you can go to the site. All you have to remember is the website, leo.am. And the links will be there. Shuby, my talented and trained intern, will be putting in the notes there, and I'll be going back through them at the end of the show. And by the end of the show, or even if maybe a little after, you should have everything you need in there, so that you can follow along. As I said, the home version of the game. That's leo.am. Link to the chat room there, irc.dslextreme.com, and the phone number again, 888-827-5536. Let's go to your calls. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
A six-pack.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, saying hello to the Geek Nation. I'm your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. 22 after the hour. Let's take our first call of the day. Sue, Carlsbad. Let me make sure I'm pressing the right buttons here. Let's see if this works. Hello, Sue.
How are you?
Oh, it worked. It's new software, and I'm getting used to it. I am great. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm hoping you can help me. I currently have Showbiz as my software to transfer 8mm tapes to DVDs.
Okay.
And the Showbiz seems to be having a problem with accepting a bunch of clips. You know how you download all your videos and then you take the video and you bring it down to your storybook or whatever you want to call it to align your DVD?
Right.
I have about 150, 175 clips, even though it's only a 14-minute video, and it doesn't seem to, it's starting to stall.
Yeah, it's bogging down is what's happening. It can't keep up.
Is that going to be the case with any software that I get?
It depends. It could be a software issue. Most likely, it's an issue with your hardware. How much of a processor do you have?
I have a new computer.
Oh, it's new.
It's only that's not even a year old.
Okay.
It's a Hewlett Packard Windows XP. It's got a 1.50 RAM.
Okay. So 1.5 gigs of RAM or? So here are the things that impact the ability to edit. There's three different things. The amount of RAM is certainly important. More important, the speed of the hard drive, and that's when you're capturing the video. So the hard drive has to keep up with the stream of video coming in. If it doesn't keep up, you'll drop frames. Now, if your clips look okay as you look at them individually, that's not the problem.
If I add any more clips...
Now I understand that, but when you look at individual clips as you're importing them and you play back the imported individual clip, does it look okay?
It looks perfect.
Okay. So it's not the hard drive. The hard drive's capturing fast enough. The processor speed could be part of it because it's got to keep track of all those clips and manage them. And
the problem is just when I bring the file down, if I bring a new video clip down, it all of a sudden it doesn't.
It's a lot of work. It's working hard.
Yeah.
So the trick is, well, I would say that the trick is probably to try a different program and see if there's a better program out there. Showbiz came with your DVD burner?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in getting a new one if you can recommend it.
Yeah, I can recommend a great program that I think will do a much better job. When you're doing a lot of editing. If you've got 145 clips in a 15-minute video, you're working that thing. That's great. So you probably want something that's a little more powerful than the stuff that came, usually the stuff that comes with a DVD burner. Is, you know, okay, but it was cheap. So the DVD guys said, oh, we'll throw this in. My recommendation is from Adobe, they make Premiere, which is the top-of-the-line Windows video editor, but they also make a more limited version, but it's still very good, called Premiere Elements, and that's the one I'd recommend, under $100.
Premiere Elements.
I think you're going to love it, and I'll tell you, it'd be hard for almost any program to handle that kind of work. But I think if anything can do it, Premiere Elements can. Steve, Agoura Hills, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Leo. Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of weeks ago, you talked to somebody about the LCOS type television.
LCOS, yeah.
LCOS, that's what I'm looking at. My question is, you said you prefer JVC over Sony, and I want to know what it is about JVC you like over the Sony.
JVC's processing chip, the DILA technology, is really nice. Now Sony is a pretty good set too. I mean, I'm not going to say either one is bad. And at this point, it really is almost what your eye perceives more than what the product is doing. I mean, I think nominally the JVC might be better. But it really is coming down to at this point the circuitry that the company's put in. And Sony does very good circuitry as well. Understand that a couple of things happen when you're watching a high def television set. Unless you're watching a high-def signal, which is only a small portion of what you're doing, this stuff has to be upscaled from a standard DVD or worse, from broadcast television, unless it's high-def. It has to be upscaled to the higher quality, 720p or 1080i. The software in the television that's doing that makes a huge difference. I like the JVC, but I don't think you'd be unhappy with a Sony. My suggestion is go look at both in the store and tell them, I don't want to look at high-def content anymore. You know, they're feeding down high-def content.
Uh-huh.
I want to look. Can you put my cable in there? I want to see what it's going to look like when I'm looking at a standard def show.
Oh, so you're saying JVC is better with standard definition then?
Well, again, I think it's marginally better, but I think you should look because it's your eyes that have to be happy. I don't think you can go wrong with either one. Both are excellent. The JVC is less expensive, you might notice.
Yeah, I know. That's another advantage of that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Sony does very good stuff. LCOS is nice because it doesn't have the screen door effect. When you get up close to the screen, admittedly, you're not going to do that a lot, but when you get up close to the screen, you don't see those lines that you'll see on a plasma or an LCD display. It's a much smoother display. And I think both the LCOS displays from Sony and JVC do a very, very good job of that. I don't think you'd be unhappy with either one of them. They're both really good. Phone number is 888-8-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. I am the tech guy, Leo Laporte. You stay right here. Sorry, I broke early on you on that. How do I put people on hold? I think I'm hanging them up.
I don't know. I'll see if I can find out.
I'm pushing the yellow button again. That seems to hang them up.
Come back. This music's going to end about 10 seconds or so before we're actually back.
Okay. Do I talk when the...
No. When we're actually back on the network, Antonio will start the CD.
Got it. And what I've been asked to do by KFI, and I imagine the other affiliates like this, is to... And we actually produce the CD this way. Wait 25 seconds before I start talking. So there's kind of 25 seconds of vamping, and then it kind of kicks in, and that's when I start talking. I am the tech guy, Leo Laporte, taking your calls and talking high tech with you, as I do every weekend. 888-8-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Use a BlackBerry? Have you ever used a BlackBerry? I guess it's really true now with a Trio and a lot of the Q, they have these phones with a keyboard on them. BlackBerry people are the worst, though. They're constantly on it. They sometimes call them crackberries. I've gone to conferences where executives who wear these little email phone devices on their hips can't get a signal, and they're actually going to corners of the room, reaching up over their heads where they just get a little bit of a signal, and they're typing out messages. It sounds like a joke. They're really doing it. I mean, these people are so addicted. And apparently, it's causing a problem of sore thumbs. Hotel chains, Hyatt Hotel chain, for instance, have introduced BlackBerry massages, hand massages. There's a $30 BlackBerry balm massage. 30 minutes for $30. A heat treatment on those sore thumbs. They work on the arm muscles, the overworked wrists. Actually, this is not really a joke. The American Physical Therapy Association has recognized BlackBerry thumb as an official... That's pathetic. As an official workplace malady. Well, now with these new Wiis, you've got Nintendo wrist for sure. People are using muscles they've never used before. MSNBC quotes a ergonomic specialist at Cornell University saying the condition is caused by highly repetitive forceful thumb movements. I don't think he talks like that, but I'm going to talk like that. Forceful thumb movements with the thumbs held back from the palms. It's terrible for you. It just keeps... Remember the Nintendo thumb of the 90s? It just keeps coming back. Technology, which is supposed to eliminate physical labor, really just is finding new ways to do it. Rick Mercer, who's a comedian and a television host in Canada, did a very funny video piece. You can see it on YouTube. An ad for a Nintendo BlackBerry helmet for people who, and I do this, walk around typing on your BlackBerry, not paying any attention and bumping into things. And it's quite funny. There's actually a state senator in New York, I don't know if he's serious, who's proposing banning or making it illegal to use these devices when you're trying to cross a street in New York City. he wants to fine people hundreds of dollars if they are seen with their BlackBerries in hand or listening to their iPods. I know there are a few of you who would agree with this, on the cell phone instead of paying attention. He says there have actually been cases of people being run down. Two cases in Brooklyn last year, people being run down because they weren't paying attention. They were on their iPods. And he says in one case, bystanders were shouting, "Watch out! Watch out!" as they were trying to cross the street. Cliff in Santa Barbara, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cliff.
Good morning, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And sort of what you were just talking about, I'm starting in a couple of weeks with a new startup, and I need to get BlackBerry. I've never had a smartphone before. Need some advice on whether BlackBerry, Trio, Motorola Q, because I like Verizon, but I'm not wedded to it. Same thing, a notebook. I'm going to be traveling a lot. I want a good, powerful notebook, but I don't want to be carrying around a desktop replacement. I want something that isn't going to weigh 10 pounds.
We'll start with the BlackBerry. If email is your number one job, BlackBerry, there's nothing beats it. And all of them are trying to compete with the BlackBerry. I've used all of these choices. The Verizon gives you a choice of the Trios, the BlackBerries, the Qs. On T-Mobile, you can use the Dash, which is very similar. They all have full keyboards. A little hard to use. You're thumb typing, hence the massage issue. But they're lightweight. I tell you, though, there is no better operating system for pure email than BlackBerry. Now, does your work support BlackBerry email, or do they prefer a certain kind of email, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters. We're three people.
Oh, so it's all right.
It's going to be our own.
Yeah, if you're at a big business, they often have a BlackBerry Exchange server. But in this case, it's just you can forward your regular email to it. I like BlackBerry. Now, the BlackBerry traditionally has not been a good multimedia phone. There's a new BlackBerry 8800. In fact, we're going to have a review on the show next week of this that does support playing back audio. It doesn't yet have a camera. If you want a camera, then you have to look at the Pearl, which I'm not a fan of because it doesn't have a regular keyboard on it. But it does have a camera. It does have music. But
One question on that. What about that keyboard, the ones where you have to it's intuitive typing, it's not the full keyboard?
Yeah, I don't like them. I think you want to, I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm an old guy and I can't learn new tricks. But I don't think they work that well.
Well, I'm there with you. I'm an old guy as well.
Yeah, if you're an old guy, stick with a regular QWERTY keyboard. Try as we might, I don't think we've come up with anything better. Now, if you want, for instance, to use Windows applications, if you want multimedia, if you're you're really wedded to Windows, these Windows mobile devices like the Trio and like the Q are good. I'm not a fan of Windows Mobile because it's an operating system, and sometimes it's a little bit complicated operating system. I've had it crash on me. You do not want a crash when you're on a phone call. That's a bad thing. So that's happened to me. Never happened to me with a BlackBerry, but it has happened to me with Windows Mobile. Their new Windows Mobile 6 is out, but the phones aren't out yet. So you're going to be stuck with Windows Mobile 5. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's a fine, it's okay, but I would only get it if you really need that particular, you need to sync with Windows. You need to use Windows documents, Word documents, that kind of thing. In that case, it's better. Now, as far as the laptop goes, you've got a lot of choices. It depends really on how small you want to go. Do you really want a 3-pounder?
Because I'm going to be using, it's going to have protocols on it. I'm going to be turning the screen around to show doctors and nurses
what
they need to be doing. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be 17 inches. I mean, it'd be great to have 17 inches, but I don't want to be carrying around, 10 pounds. So, 15-inch screen, a CD or a DVD. Type setup and just a fast processor these days, but primarily it's just for the basic stuff.
You like the idea of a tablet?
Word. I don't think I'm going to use it much. I think I'll really just turn around.
Right.
Yeah, I imagine the tablet.
Well, it's the nice thing about the tablet. When you said turn around, it does turn around, right? Because screen actually rotates. And if you're showing people stuff, it's kind of nice because it flips down and then the keyboard's out of the way. I'm talking about a convertible tablet.
Right.
The keyboard's out of the way, and it really becomes a great. The thing that sold me on a tablet, I was sitting in an airplane next to a salesman who used PowerPoint on a tablet for presentations, and it's great because you can annotate. It's really a neat way to demonstrate stuff. Two good tablets. My favorite right now is the Lenovo X60, the ThinkPad tablet. They're really great. And they start at $1,800, but you're basically going to configure that to have the power that you want. So you pay more if you want a faster processor. They're not heavy, about 5 pounds. If
you
don't want
the... good?
Yeah, I think they've kept the quality up. You know,
that was my concern.
Yeah, they bought the ThinkPad line from IBM. In some ways, they've actually out-innovated IBM. I think their new stuff is in some ways maybe better. And boy, they look exactly like. I mean, they're still using the same chassis, the same equipment. So I think they're as robust. If you're a little nervous about buying from the Chinese government, because that's who owns Lenovo, the Toshiba, of course, is Japan. I don't know how different. It's Toshiba's Portage is a very nice, the R400.
What about Dell?
I'm a Dell fan. I have to say, for corporate laptops, Dell is great in terms of service and support. You know, I just bought a Dell laptop. You get a phone call from a guy who says, "Want to make sure you're happy." You get email, a mail from them. They seem to really stand behind their stuff. I have been very happy with Dell. Can't go wrong with them either. Just some people are not comfortable with buying email or web, but if you don't mind buying online.
Last point on that is, you know, there's a business center for Dell and there's the home office part for Dell. Does it matter which I go into to look at it?
No, you know, I buy the home ones.
Okay.
The business ones generally are a little stripped down because businesses don't want all of those features. You're going to use this as a regular laptop too, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're pretty much the same. I bought an XPS M1210. It's a 12-inch. It's a smaller one. They have a 1710 that's got a bigger screen if that's important to you. And I've been very happy with it. Runs Vista great. Now, you'll be getting Vista, you know, on this new one.
I was a little worried about that just because I love XP. I've never had a problem with XP in years. The Vista looks great, but that's the only thing I can see that's really different.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's. I think they've really done a good job of security. There are some negatives with Vista. There will be compatibility issues with some of your software. You'll have to buy a new antivirus, but even some of the line of business stuff you use might not work properly, so you should definitely. There's a compatibility tester you can download from Microsoft and run on your XP machine. Make sure that those programs will work, those drivers will work. I would also, I'm a little nervous about Vista because they've loaded it up with stuff that you don't want, I don't want, copy protection stuff for Hollywood. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about this. It looks to me, Bruce Schneier, who's a security expert, has a great column I'll talk about, in which he says it really isn't that Hollywood made Microsoft do this. This is Microsoft's bid to dominate distribution of films and music. The problem is it's in all copies. It's all versions of Windows. If you buy Vista, you've got this stuff. And I think it causes some problems. We've yet to see how bad it is. It's only been out for a few weeks, but I'm a little nervous. You know, if you like XP, you're happy with XP, Dell will do an XP build, and I would suggest that.
I could just go with that. Sounds like a good idea.
That's actually a compelling reason to go with Dell because, you know, you go off the shelf, you're not going to be able to get XP on these guys. But Dell will do a build to order for you.
All right, so I'm going to look at Dell, and I'll probably still look at Lenovo just because I've always liked.
Yeah, if you like ThinkPads, yeah, they're good. Both of those excellent business choices. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of them. They're really good. Show notes online, by the way, leo.am. The chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. Let's see. I think I have enough time to get Paul in from Laguna Niguel. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the Tech Guy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Love the show. Got a question for you. Hope you can give me some guidance.
Yes, sir.
13-year-old daughter who's very, very computer literate. However, she needs some help with her math. And I heard about this online tutoring, you know, going and hooking up with individuals.
Yep, there's lots of it.
In India and what have you. And want to know how about going about doing that. And, you know, if you could give me some.
You're not an AOL user by any chance, are you?
No. We have she actually operates off a Mac MacBook.
Okay.
I also have XP environment in my house.
Okay.
But, she uses the Mac chat.
You know, AOL has a great homework helper system that I've recommended in the past. I'm not familiar with these. This is all pretty new. These new third party outsourced tutors. I've seen some pretty good stuff. It looks good, but I don't know anybody who's tried it. So I'm going to have to punt in terms of answering you. But I can tell you, somebody will call and tell us. If anybody has any experience with these guys, I'd love to know more about it. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Or go in the chat room, irc.dslextreme.com. And, you know, keep listening. We'll either do it on the show or we'll put it in the show notes at leo.am. I'm glad you're here. I'm really glad you're listening. We're having a good time today, and we're going to keep those calls coming. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, this is Leo Laporte. We talk about backup all the time, but does anybody really do it? Just think what you'd lose if your hard drive went down today. Your family photos, your music, valuable documents
so
you just can't replace. Well, I found a backup solution that does it for me automatically.
What was that?
In the
I am
background,
so hoarse on this.
All,
I recorded this yesterday and I
online,
barely had a voice.
So it's always safe no matter what happens to my system.
Just coming back.
It's
I
called Carbonite.com, C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E.com.
Just in time.
Yeah.
You can thank me
I
for
didn't,
it.
I wouldn't talk to anybody for the last 24 hours.
See how great it is. There's no credit card needed.
It's all
just
sign language.
Carbonite.com and use the offer code Leo. Carbonite is less than $50 a year, backs up automatically, and best of all, unlimited storage. I'm backing up all my podcasts. Gigabytes worth of data. This thing is amazing.
Anybody figured out how to put these guys on hold?
Again, Carbonite.com. Try it free for 30 days by going to Carbonite.
No, and I even called Tom, who is our Carbonite. Resident phone screener.
My name is Todd.
He doesn't
Davis,
know.
CEO
he thought you clicked on it once
what
and
I'm
put him on hold. I says, no,
it seems to be disconnecting. Yeah,
number
yeah it seems
457-55-5462. You may think I'm crazy, but I know my identity is safe.
I'll try and get it figured out by next weekend.
Okay. I mean, if I can't, it's okay, but that's kind of my preferred way. I prefer not to hang up on people.
And guarantee your good name. Contact us at 877-LIFELOCK or lifelock.com. That's 877-LIFELOCK or lifelock.com.
Paula Sela is a real Geico customer, not an actor. So to help tell her story, we hired that announcer guy from the movies.
When the storm hit, both our cars were totally underwater.
In a world where both of our cars were totally underwater,
we thought it would take forever to get some help.
But a new wind was about to blow.
With Geico, we had our check in 2 days.
Payback. This time, it's for real.
Geico. Real service, real savings.
Hey, Leo?
Yeah.
Tom just called. He says he thinks it's Control H.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
He said, I don't know if we want to test that on there or not.
You know, I bet there's a. Let me see if there's a help file in here or something. I didn't even think of that. Might have sent me some.
Do you see that one line on hold, the very last one?
Yeah.
On the air. Try and see if you can control H that one.
You mean line 7?
Yeah, sorry, line 7.
Okay, so I would pick it up. Oops. That didn't work.
It's not Control H.
Well, it might be. I clicked it. Okay, it's online now. Let me do Control H.
Hang it up?
No, I can hang it up. The problem is I want to put it on hold because I don't want to, like, disconnect them. Usually when I'm done with them, I want to hold them because I'm just basically muting them. It's all right. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking about technology, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, anything having a chip in it. Oh yeah, computers too. Phone number 1-888-8-ASK-LEO. I'd love to hear about these online tutoring situations. You know, has anybody have any experience with them? Because they are, you know, you're outsourcing it. There often is a guy in India doing it. I mean, no reason why they wouldn't make perfectly good tutors. I'm just curious what people's experiences have been. It's pretty amazing. I mean, some of the technology they're using to do this tutoring. I mean, it's not a phone call. It's on the net. Often the child will enter answers in. It's almost like there's even a blackboard where you can draw your answers, and the tutor will ask questions. It's pretty amazing looking stuff, but I have no direct experience with it. I'd love to hear from somebody who does. Seems like it would work. Certainly it's affordable, in some ways more affordable than a regular tutor, right? But you don't have that personal touch. I am a big fan of the personal touch. Probably people assume, because of the fact that I live, breathe, and eat technology, that I'm one of those people who says you got to have technology everywhere in the schools, and I'm not. I even discouraged our local elementary school from doing too much technology in the school. Sure, kids need to learn about computers. They need to learn about keyboarding. They're going to have to type in their life, and they have to be comfortable with technology. But I don't think technology can take the place of a real-life human being. And I hate to see in schools where teachers are kind of, in my day, they put the film strip on and wander out of the room. And believe me, teachers I know are overworked and underpaid. And God bless the film strip in the movie, because it gave them a break. But it isn't a substitute for real teaching, nor is sitting a kid down in front of Roger Rabbit or Robert, whatever it is, what is the Reader Rabbit, going to teach him to read. It's helpful. My kids used it. But it took a human being to teach them to read. And I think it takes a human being and a human being's interaction and touch. And even, even though there is a human being on the other end, it's not quite the same thing as somebody sitting right there, right next to you. So it's certainly a tool. Technology is a great tool in the schools. But it is not a substitute for humans, I don't think. Pete Manchester, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you, Pete?
I'm good. How are you, Leo?
I'm very well. Welcome.
I'm sitting in the Apple Store. I have a nice shiny new, on the Apple Store, on the web. I have a nice shiny new Mac Pro picked out.
All right.
Credit card number picked in. I'm one click away from buying.
Okay.
And I just I have one sort of lingering question.
Wipe the drool off the screen there, though. It's a little, that's better.
I used to be that you got sort of taken for a ride when you bought RAM from Apple.
Yes, it did.
And I've kind of decided I want 4 gigs of RAM, so I'm just wondering. I haven't bought one since 2000 or so, so I'm wondering
if
that's still true.
It is in general still true, although Apple finally realized that people were going out elsewhere to get their RAM. I recommended it. Don't buy RAM from Apple. They mark it up 50%. Yeah. But I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last 6 months, they've dropped the RAM prices considerably.
They have. No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and the Mac Pro RAM is kind of a little special.
I was looking at it. It's got heatsink and all that stuff.
It's got heat sinks on it. In fact, initially when the Mac Pro came out, Crucial and Kingston and some of these third-party memory companies offered RAM for a day and then pulled it because it turned out they weren't really up to spec and it wasn't working well in the Mac Pros. I'll be honest, when I bought a Mac Pro, this is the high-end Mac, folks. This is the Pro model for people who are doing lots of video editing or Photoshop or whatever. I bought the Apple RAM, and I put 4 gigs in it, as you're planning, and I spent a little bit more. I don't think while you've got that open and look what the RAM differential is, I'd go to Crucial.com. They do now sell RAM for it. It has the proper heat sinks. I trust Crucial. If they say it works, I'm sure it works. Apple RAM I've purchased, typically I'll purchase also from a company called Trans International. You might check their prices too, TransIntl.com. They kind of specialize in Mac RAM. Crucial and Kingston. But my experience has been that Apple got very aggressive all of a sudden. They said, I'd say, you're spending $3,000 on this computer to begin with. If it's $200 more for Apple RAM and you're going to have the peace of mind and the reliability, I think it's probably worth it. You're buying a top-of-the-line system. And in this case, I think it's all right to spend a little more on the RAM. And I'll do my homework because I haven't checked in the last few weeks. But the last time I checked, Apple RAM was almost at parity with third-party RAM. And if that's the case, might as well get the Apple RAM. They put it in for you when you order it. It arrives with 4 gigs. Not that it's hard to add RAM. It is trivial to add RAM to a Mac Pro. In fact, that is one of the beauties of the Mac Pro case. What a case. What a gorgeous case. So easy to add hard drives, to add memory. It's just a snap. Jeff, Temecula, California. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
The technology is amazing.
Go figure. Hey, I'm trying to do work on video podcasting. I got Dreamweaver. I downloaded the podcast from you about the audio podcasting thing a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong or if it's a server-side issue.
What's happening? So you've made the podcast. It's already done. It's edited. You've got it uploaded to a server.
Yes.
So that's not the problem. The problem is getting people to see the feed?
That it would appear so. When I go to the URL that the podcast is linked to, in Firefox, you know, you can click on the on the title of it to download it.
Yep.
When I do that, I get the 404 error, and it's not working. Is that indicative of a...
It's nothing there. So check your link, because you're... No. Even if the server is misconfigured, you'll get something. 404 means ain't nothing here by that name. So it's the link is actually wrong. I recommend for Mac users a program called Feeder from Reinvented Software. For Windows users, a program called Feed for All to make your RSS feeds. It's the best way to do it. They're much, much more accurate that way. More to come. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you for joining us. 888-8-ASK-LEO. I am the tech guy. Six after the hour, and I am Leo Laporte, and I'm so glad to talk to you today. I am the tech guy, and this show is all about tech. Computers, the internet, MP3 players, cameras, cell phones, home theater, big screen TVs. If it's got a chip in it, I will talk about it, and I would love to talk about it with you. 888-8-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-8-888-8. You know, it's. I'll explain something in a second. 888-827-5536. You know, when we do the, you know, Ask Leo, 888-8-ASK-LEO, on an old style phone, you look at the A and, oh yeah, A is 2 and it's Ask is, you know, you could figure it out. But I'd have at least one phone, my BlackBerry, that doesn't do that anymore. I was in an airport the other day, and waiting for the parking lot shuttle to come, and it was late at night, and I think I realized, oh, it's not going to come unless I called it. I looked on the ticket, and it only spells it out. It doesn't give the number. And I only had my BlackBerry, and I'm thinking, I can't figure out. I had the Dash, too. I had two phones. Neither one had those letters on. I couldn't figure out. I don't know how to call these people. How do you, you know, maybe it was late at night, but I could not figure out a way to solve that. You know, it was 1-800, you know, park outside or something. And that's what it said on the ticket. Did not have numbers. So please, folks, if you're going to put letters, remember now, some of these new phones, they don't have numbers anymore. We can't figure out what the letter. Now, maybe I'm dumb. You're sitting there listening. And you're saying, oh, easy. You could have solved. Could I have gone to a website? How could I have solved that? I had to borrow somebody's phone and hope that their phone still had letters and numbers on the keys. These phones that have keyboards, they don't do it anymore. You know, why do we still say dial a phone number? Because there's no dial. I haven't been a dial in a long time. I was watching a movie the other day, and there was a phone with a dial on it, and it almost caught my breath. I thought, wow, I haven't seen one of those in ages, and I have no idea what my kids think. They've never seen one. No idea. So we were talking a little bit about Windows Vista last hour and about the copy protection that Microsoft has built into it. And I quoted a guy named Bruce Schneier, S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R. He's a great, I think one of the best security experts out there. Right after my buddy Steve Gibson, who will, by the way, be a regular on this show, Talking Security. But Bruce writes a great blog. He's a real expert on this stuff. And he's talking about the copy protection in Vista. He says, Windows Vista includes an array of, quote, features that you don't want. Now, I like Vista. I have to say right up front, and this is Leo talking, I like Vista. It's pretty. There are some real improvements in security, very real. Some very real improvements in usability. But there's this big issue of this copy protection that Microsoft has is foisting on all every one of us. Every version of Vista has this built in. He says, and remember, this is one of the foremost security experts in the world, these new features will make your computer less reliable and less secure. They'll make your computer less stable and run slower. They'll cause technical support problems. They may even require you to upgrade some of your hardware and existing software, and they, and this is the important part, don't do anything useful. In fact, they're working against you. These features are built in so that Vista can play high-def DVDs, but they call it premium content, content that's got some very serious copy protection in it, more than a regular DVD. Because, you know, we cracked the regular DVDs in about 3 seconds. So the movie industry said, we better do something a little better than that. So they've got this new AACS copy protection, which, I might add, has already been broken. By the way, this is the point, you'll hear me say this if you're new to me and new to the show, you'll hear me say this again and again. Copy protection doesn't stop pirates. It never has, it never will. People who steal movies know how to get around it. They've known from day one. They know it's easy. That's not the issue. Copy protection only annoys honest users. Honest users are the people who are stopped by it, who are thwarted by it, who are inconvenienced by it, not pirates. And this is a perfect example. Now, here's the interesting angle on this from Bruce, and I have to say I had not thought of this. Microsoft says, hey, we had to do it. Hollywood's making us. If you wanted to watch an HD DVD on your computer, you have to have this in there. We don't have any choice. Bruce and many others have pointed out, wait a minute. Microsoft has 95% monopoly of the operating system market. Every computer has Windows on it, except for a small percentage that run Mac and Linux. And 95% is enough to say to Hollywood, nah, I don't think so. We're going to do it our way, and you're going to adapt to us. Or you're not going to play on computers. Microsoft could have said this. Probably should have said this. Bruce says, here's why Microsoft didn't say it. And I think this is very telling. He says, this isn't about stopping pirates, I'm quoting again, and the small percentage of people who download free movies from the internet. This isn't even about Microsoft satisfying its Hollywood customers at the expense of those of us paying for the privilege of using Vista. No, this is about the overwhelming majority of honest users and who owns, and this is the key, the distribution channels to them. He says, it might have started as a partnership. In the end, Microsoft is going to end up locking the movie companies into selling content in Microsoft's own formats. It's Microsoft's bid to control the distribution, electronic online distribution of music and movies. And frankly, that's the future. You may be a Netflix subscriber, you may go to the movie store and rent your movies, but in the long run, the future is online, downloading onto a computer-like device, running software probably made by Microsoft, and that's what Microsoft wants. He points out, you know, Microsoft is in the past, and nobody's doubted this, and even Microsoft's admitted to it, used its monopoly, its control of the marketplace, to enter new markets, and he says this is a perfect example. So what do you do? Just say no to Vista? I think there's some very real, tangible benefits to Vista. In fact, I'm telling people if you buy a new computer, you probably should get it with Vista. It will come with Vista. You shouldn't fight it. I'm using Vista on many of my machines. Ironically, not the machine that I use the most because my software that I use, my editing software, doesn't run on it. But everything else. What do? We complain to Microsoft? That's not going to do any good. I think the first step, though, is knowing that they're doing this. 888-8-ASK-LEO. Alex San Bernardino, welcome. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm very good.
Questions. Good. I'm glad to hear it. Hey, I got a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
Reference high definition and plasma TVs.
All right.
I kind of did some research. Tax time is coming. I'm getting my check.
Yeah, baby. Going high def.
The Wi-Fi. Yeah, go for it.
I'll tell you, I love high def. I mean, when you have a good television and high def content, there is no better experience. It's amazing.
Now, do you recommend any plasmas? I don't know which one really.
You know what I bought? And I'll tell you, I mean, I put my own money where my mouth is here. In the past, I've told people I love LCDs, and I think the Sharp Aquos are great LCDs for smaller screens. You want in the living room where there's light. I'm a big fan if you want bang for your buck, you know, more screen size for less money. I'm a big fan of the rear projection, as we were talking about last hour, Elcos DLP. But if you want a great home theater experience with a flat screen, you can either hang on the wall or just put out of the way. You're going to be in a dimmed room where, you know, you and really paying attention. I think plasma is a great choice, and that's what I bought for my home theater. And I think they're it's the three Ps for plasma. It's Pioneer and Panasonic.
And that's what I've found out.
Yep. And Pioneer's what I bought. I love the Pioneers. I think they're now in their fifth generation, and these screens are great. A lot of the issues I had early with burn-on or burn-in, you know, where the image stays on the screen, those are better. There's still a problem. You got to be aware of it. I tell my kids, you may not leave the Xbox on. You turn that off. And, you know, that's good. I got it drilled in their brain. I come in, not only is the TV turned off, but the power button, everything. It's like they unplug it. They don't want to. Dad's wrath. The other thing that's great now, and you've noticed this, I'm sure, Alex, is, you know, I bought a 50-inch Pioneer, which 5 years ago would have been $15,000. They're down now to about $3,000.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably another reason why I'm getting one of those, because now it's affordable.
I mean, affordable. Isn't that funny? I mean, you know, you'd ask somebody 10 years ago, how much are you going to pay for a TV? $300 or $400, that's a lot. If I get a big screen, 26-inch, I might spend $500 or $600. $3,000 is affordable? Well, I guess it is. But it's a lot better.
It is. And it kind of helped me out with my second question, which was Blu-ray or HD. And, you know, they're selling the Blu-rays, the players, for $1,000.
Yeah.
If you get an Xbox, which does the same thing, right?
No, here's if you're going to start with a gaming machine, Xbox 360 does HD DVD for $200 extra, or for about $600, buy a PlayStation 3. That's got Blu-ray built in.
You have to
look at what movies are on each format, because they're not the same. I went with HD DVD because I already had an Xbox 360. It was cheap, right? The only drawback is the Xbox 360 is noisier than a jet engine.
Oh.
So my wife's saying, do we have to have this whining sound in the... And yeah, honey, because that's the HD DVD player. I'm thinking I'm going to buy, you know. And by the way, LG now makes a dual player HD and Blu-ray, but it's $1,200.
Yeah, give it a few years.
Yeah, so that's not a good choice. I think if I had to pick a winner, it'd be HD DVD right now. But Blu-ray's not out, but HD's starting to pull ahead. And I would say look at the movies. Go to Amazon.com and type in HD DVD or Blu-ray. Look at the movies. See what movies you want to see. What movies they have. You know, if you've got kids, you're going to want Blu-ray, because all the Disney stuff is on Blu-ray. But Universal's on HD DVD. I like the titles a little bit better on HD DVD. I went with HD DVD. I would love to have both, but who can afford it? Yeah, this is a tough battle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Stay right here. Is this music okay to leave in the podcast? Is this production music or is this actual music?
This is Premiere Music only.
Okay, so I can use it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you can use it.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize.
I can cut it out of the podcast. I mean, you know, but just underneath my voice when I come back, I'm leaving it.
Okay, that's fine.
How's it going? Everything okay?
Everything's awesome.
Who's ready?
I'm so glad you're here. Thank you.
Go home.
I gotta get a broken clock.
Leo, can you see the I am at the bottom of the Condren?
I can.
I put up the brakes and your number there.
No, I don't see that. I only see Victor Anaheim, what's the best cell provider. And when I click it, it goes away. Good day to you. And hello to everybody in the Geek Nation. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Not necessarily, you don't have to be a geek. I am a geek, I'll admit it. You know, on this show, a geek is okay. It's okay to be a geek. Not a nerd. Understand there's a difference. I am a geek. Proud of it. But you don't have to be a geek to listen to the show. And don't worry, it's not catching. I don't think. I'm pretty sure. Well, all right, it is. In fact, it's completely catching. But it's okay. Just relax and allow yourself to enjoy, to get into the geekitude. You listen to the show, and I know sometimes people listen, they go, I don't know what language you're talking. It sounds like English, but there are all these weird words like bits, bytes, RAM, CPUs. That sounds strange. Keep listening. Soon it will all make sense. It'll become clear, and you will be one of us. Is email out of control in your life? I tell you, it is so out of control in my life. Of course, you know, I've had the same public email address. Leo, I'm going to give it out now, see? That's a mistake, isn't it? Leo at leoville.com. I've had that same address for 10 years, I think. So it's in, you know, I'm not going to get any more spam. It's already in every spam list there is. They all know me. So it's no, you know, I don't have to hide it. It's not so much spam I'm worried about. I have very effective spam, anti-spam filtering, and someday I'll tell you all about that. That'd be a good subject for a talk, a little sermonette on how to fight spam. But it's not the spam I'm worried about. It's the real emails, the mails from people who I want to talk to. I get too many of them, hundreds and hundreds of day. It's gotten to the point, and I don't know if you've experienced this yet. If you're new to email, you probably haven't. I watch my wife, and she's so happy when an email comes in. It's like, I got an email. Yes, you enjoy that now. But after a while, and I guess it depends on how many of your friends and family are wired, but after a while, that number goes up. It's not just one email a day or two or three or 50 or 100. It gets to be more and more pretty soon. You not only can't answer them all, you can't even read them all. It's becoming a problem. And then there's the people who can't not read their email, who are addicted. Moby, you know Moby, the electronic musician? He tried to go email free. He started this in about September of 2006, through the end of 2006. Couldn't do it. People thought he was nuts. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal this week. Now, people are trying to give up email. They're checking it all the time. Jeff Clark, a graphics designer, went cold turkey in December. He says email was like cocaine. He became anxious after a few hours away from a digital drug and then would check messages to help him get back to sleep when he woke up during the night. That's what I do. That's, I guess, how you know if you're an email junkie. When you wake up in the middle of the night, when you can't sleep, what do you do? Do you go to your computer and check your mail? Bad sign. You're in trouble. Reverend Mark Batterson, Washington, D.C., resolved not to check his work email on his day off. Well, that seems like a good idea. He says because he's a pastor, it's really hard. They feel guilty if they aren't accessible all the time. But he says if God took a day of rest, I should be able to, too. He stayed email-free 6 Wednesdays in a row. And it said, work. It's harder not to check it. Email is a problem. It makes it very easy. I think part of the problem is, you know, when you had to sit down, write a letter, get an envelope, put an envelope, put a stamp on it, take it to the mailbox, it's a commitment. The email requires no commitment. It's too easy to write an email. You jot off a line, you press send, that's it. It takes seconds. There are now hotels. The Palm Island Resort and Spa in the Florida Keys will they'll lock you up. They'll lock your BlackBerry up. When you check in, they say, give us your device. And that's it. Sheraton Chicago Hotels and Towers takes your BlackBerry. I think we are a nation with a problem. They're calling it Web 0.0. Yeah, I'd love you to join us in the chat room. We've got 201 people in there. I think it's a new world record. irc.dslextreme.com. If you've never chatted, this is a great time to do it because it's moderated. It's safe. It's safe for the kids even. And, you know, it's fun. It's a little crazy when there's 200 people in there all typing at the same time, I have to say. But it is a lot of fun. irc.dslextreme.com. You don't even need any software. We've got a little Java client on the webpage there you can use to get in there. But also information if you prefer to use an IRC client like XChat or Merc, you can do that as well. I love the chat. I read it. I actually go in there during the breaks, and it's the kids in the back of the class. You're invited to join. The show notes are online, too. We've got our own website, leo.am. It's a little primitive, a little backward right now. I'm getting a whole new one, complete redesign with interactivity and all sorts of great stuff. That'll be a few weeks out. The great folks at Six Apart are working on that for me with a web design firm called Apperceptive. They're just doing it. Oh, wait till you see it. Leo.am, though, right now. More of your calls, 888-8-ASK-LEO, coming up in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Nice job getting into that break.
I'm getting there. This program's great. It puts it up in big letters on my screen. It says rap 60 seconds before and then counts me down.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Next does. If I press next, did that take the one that's been on the hold the longest?
You know what? I don't know.
I think it should say the hold, how long they've been holding on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at that.
I just wonder what Next does. I gotta find a tutorial on this chondrin software. I wonder if there's one online.
Next, we'll just skip it over to whatever, like, say you're on line three, it'll just skip over to line four.
Does it numerically? That makes sense. Yeah.
That's funny. You can see Next, but you can't see the blue box that she's...
I can now.
Oh, okay.
And then I see 15. I don't know what the 15 means. The Tech Guy, Leo Laporte, that's me. 888-8-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. That's our new number. And we are welcoming some great new listeners from Talk Radio 950 KPRC, from News Talk 880 WMEQ, from the Fox Talk 1360, and 1010 KBW. Good to have you all on the show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We are here every weekend talking about technology at this time on this fine station. And it is great to have you on. I tell you, it's a real thrill for me. I've been doing this show, as I mentioned at the beginning, about 15 years, for the last three in Los Angeles. Now still in L.A. on KFI, but also in Houston and Eau Claire and Ridgecrest and Waco. And it's just great. Just great. Let's go right back to the phones. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the number. Victor's in Anaheim. Hello, Victor. Welcome. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going well.
Good, good. Listen, out of all the questions that have been asked you, I think this is just going to be a snap for you. I just know it is.
Because I'm working awful hard. I need a break.
Well, you're going to get a break.
All right.
My cell phone's flatlining it right now. And I was wondering, in your opinion, what is the best cellular provider that you feel?
You think this is an easy question? You know, best is such a difficult.
It is, after all the questions you've been asked.
Well, yeah, it's not particularly technical, but it is a tough one, because best is such a nebulous word. What best means to you is what? Best coverage, best service, best phones.
Best coverage. I mean, out of all in all, or do you just keep them?
I think it's generally agreed. Even now, things have changed a little bit because of this the singular AT&T merger,
mm-hmm.
Because that added a huge number of cell sites. But I think it's still agreed that it's at least where you are in Southern California and in most areas of the nation, Verizon still has the best coverage. But it really varies from spot to spot. And if you travel, for instance. I don't use my Verizon phone in Canada because it's roaming. It's very expensive, and it won't work at all in many areas of Europe.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not GSM. It's the technology it uses is CDMA, and most of the world is GSM. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. If you travel outside the borders of the U.S., you're going to want a GSM phone. And Verizon is probably not a good choice, nor is Sprint. On the other hand, if you want the best coverage right where you are in Anaheim, I think Verizon is probably the best. If you're looking for the best data, the high-speed data, Sprint and Verizon are the best, ironically.
Oh, because, my kids have Sprint right now.
Sprint's very fast, but so is Verizon. They both have EVDO, which is a very high-speed data system, and they're getting the new HSDPA, which is even higher speed. T-Mobile and Singular are playing catch-up in that regard. They're still back on the edge technology, which is considerably slower.
Can I mention who I have right
now? Of course.
I have Singular right now.
Great. Here's a chance. And this is what I would recommend you do, is you ask Verizon customers. But I'm going to ask you as a Singular customer. How's your coverage been?
Uh-oh. He's gone.
I must have pressed a bad button. Well, that's the question you've got to ask, and you've got to ask people in your neighborhood. You've got to ask people who live around you or at work. You know, I bought a T-Mobile phone, and it didn't work in my office. Had I had the sense to ask my coworkers, they could have told me, oh, yeah, don't get T-Mobile because it doesn't work in this building. So best is a very difficult question. I mean, and I didn't even get to the other issue for gadget hounds like me.
phones, because not all carriers have the same phones. One of the reasons I went to T-Mobile was because I liked the choice of phones on T-Mobile. They have the Sidekick. They're the only ones who do. They have the Dash. They're the only ones who do. And I think those are really great phones, smartphones. If you want an iPhone, the new Apple iPhone in June, you're going to stick with Singular because they're the only ones who have it. Now, there will be unlocked iPhones, not from Apple, but there will be other people, gray marketers, who will buy the phones, unlock them, and sell them to you. In fact, you can pre-order right now online. I'm not sure I'd recommend. In fact, I know I wouldn't recommend it, but you can do it. An unlocked iPhone. But you won't get some of the benefits of the iPhone because the Singular was smart. They said, how do we keep people in the Singular fold? Because we know there are a lot of T-Mobile and Verizon users who are going to buy this phone, unlock it. Actually, Verizon users can't, but other GSM companies like T-Mobile unlock it and use it on their service. So they have this special random access voicemail. That's a Singular-only feature. I think there's a couple other Singular-only features that won't work if you unlock it and use it on T-Mobile. So what's the best cell carrier? Boy, that's, you could see, it's a complicated question. If it's a phone to you, and primarily a phone, not a data device, not a gadget, then coverage is the most important. And I think your Singular's pretty good, and Verizon's pretty good, and both do a good job. Sprint, Nextel, T-Mobile, not on the second tier there. Not terrible, but not as good. If you're looking for high-speed data, there's no question. Sprint and Singular, they're the best. Did I say Singular? I did, didn't I? Sprint and Verizon, they're the best. And if you're looking for cool phones, I think T-Mobile and Sprint have the coolest phones. So you thought it was an easy question. Far from it. not even close. It's just there's no right answer. That's, I guess, why. Let's go to Enrique in Pomona. Enrique, welcome. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I had a question about Windows Vista. You've been talking a lot about it. And, I was wondering about the performance on it, because I've seen the requirements on it. It's a massive operating system.
What is it, 15 gigabytes? Like a pig. It's actually, I think that the performance demands of Vista are kind of overstated. It will run on a 500 megabyte RAM, 512 meg RAM machine, the 2 gigahertz processor, even maybe a 1 plus gigahertz processor. It'll run okay. You'll lose some of the visual effects, the Aero interface, unless you have a high-end graphics card. And it will slow down on some things if you run a lot of applications or some memory-heavy applications. You want the best performance from Vista? 2 gigahertz plus processor, a gigabyte of RAM, absolutely. A late model video card if you want Aero. But it'll run on a slower machine. Do you have an old machine you're thinking of upgrading?
Actually, I have a brand new computer, and it's running on Windows XP. But I was wondering, how does it compare, like, performance-wise?
I don't think you're going to see. You know, I put it on a computer. I bought as I mentioned earlier, a laptop about 3 months ago. Because I was able to get Vista early, a pre-release version to test. And so I wanted to test it. So I got it. It was an XP machine, obviously, because I got it 3 months ago. And I ran it with XP for a while, and I put Vista on it. It seemed to run about the same. Now, it's a late model, Core 2 processor, good video card. I got a lot of 2 gigs of RAM in it. But it seemed to run about the same with XP and Vista. So I guess the answer is, Vista shouldn't necessarily run a lot slower on your existing machine, especially if it's a late model machine.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's a larger question. Should you upgrade? And that's yeah. really under what's underlying your question, right? And
yeah.
And that's a little tougher because, I don't know, it depends on your devices, on your software. Some of it may not work well. I think Vista is a big improvement. It is a better Windows. Now, some people have been very negative about Vista. Stephen Maines, or Manis, I guess is pronounced, wrote the most negative article I've ever seen about Vista. Just slammed it. I don't agree with him. I don't think Vista is bad. I'm not happy about the copy protection features built into it, but I think in many other ways it sure looks better. It's got a lot of nice features. It's a worthwhile upgrade, even just for the security alone. But it's a, that's a good question. Is it good, worth upgrading an existing machine I don't know. I mean, I would absolutely say buying a new machine, get it with Vista. A machine that's late model and you want the latest, greatest, it's probably okay, but I would run the Vista compatibility checker before you upgrade. That's free on Microsoft's site. It's a little program that'll check your hardware, your device drivers, some of your applications to make sure they'll work. And then check the applications that you use a lot. Check and make sure that there's a Vista version. In most cases, they'll work fine, but this is brain surgery. Right?
Yeah.
You're really changing the guts of that heart of that machine. The heart of it is really changing.
But okay, how about the drivers? Do they work any better? Do they give any improved functionality?
No.
Or?
Basically, it's Windows. It's Windows in a pretty dress.
Okay.
Okay.
That was a question.
All right. Thanks, Enrique. I mean, there are definitely security improvements. This user access control is a big, big improvement. I don't think people are going to get viruses and spyware anywhere near to the degree that they have been, because Vista demands you pay attention. You know, if you were using XP and you knew what you were doing and you behaved properly, properly is probably not the right word, but you modified your behavior to be more secure, you're perfectly safe in XP. The problem is most people don't know how to act or what to do, you know, and they do dangerous things like click on links in email or open attachments or go to dangerous websites, download files from music sharing sites, that kind of thing, and they get infected. Well, Vista handholds you a little bit more. It warns you more. It says, did you want to do that? I don't think you should do that. That's a bad idea. What are you doing? So in that sense, you know, I think people will be safer. The firewall is beefed up, does a better job. It comes with an anti-spyware program, Windows Defender, on it. All of these are good things. Jeff Pasadena, KF... I'm sorry. I'm so close to saying KFI. I knew I would do it. It was just a question of how long. The pool has now been resolved. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jeff.
How are you doing today, Leo?
Excellent. How are you?
Wonderful. Two quick things. You know, I'm so bummed that the iPhone is singular only, because I'm a Verizon customer.
Sure.
Very happy with the service, and I just don't want to leave Verizon, but I want one of those iPhones so bad. It's a real...
tough one, and I think that's Singular's big bet, isn't it? Singular's saying, oh, we're going to get some new customers!
Yeah. I mean, maybe things will change in the future, but it sounds like a cool phone. But the reason why I'm calling you today, I've got so many questions, but I'll just narrow it down to one.
All right.
I have a pre-Intel PowerBook that doesn't have a built-in EyeSight or anything.
Okay.
And last week I went down to a dealer to pick up an EyeSight camera, and lo and behold, it's no longer available. But I want to use Skype with video, and I cannot find any camera that works on the Mac that's plug-and-play.
Any FireWire camcorder will work if you've got a FireWire a DV camcorder. That's my recommendation. You'll get great images that way.
If you don't have a DV camcorder, is there any? I mean, I've gone online looking for FireWire webcams, MacBook, and it's all this stuff just like USB.
Let me check. But I mean, I'd be surprised if Logitech did not have a Mac compatible USB camera. But I'll tell you, you get much better results with FireWire if you've got the FireWire capability. The Mac supports it out of the box. But let me check and see. I'm gonna give you your top five things I should do this that you should do to protect yourself. The behaviors you need to do to protect yourself in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am so glad you're here. Thanks for joining us. And we are talking tech, as always, every weekend, right here, this time. Phone number is 1-888-8-ASK-LEO. We'll blind you with our geekiness. So thank you to Webmaxter87 in the chat room, who has given us a answer for the last caller. He has an old Mac. He wants to use a USB netcam with it. Of course, most of them don't come with Mac drivers. There is a company that makes a Mac driver, ecamm.com, with two M's, ecamm.com, that makes a USB driver. That's all you need, right? It's just about the software, getting the software that can connect the USB camera to the Mac OS X. And they even sell a camera, apparently. So the nice thing about the Mac is it will work with any FireWire camera. The EyeSight is a FireWire camera, and so is your DV camcorder. But if you don't have that, and you have a USB camera, or you want to buy a cheap USB camera, this is a good solution. ECAMM.com. Now, I mentioned that behavior is most important when you're protecting yourself. To be secure, you can be secure on any version of Windows if you do five simple things. If you do these religiously, you're going to be secure. The problem is that people don't do them, and so they need help. They need software. They need special stuff to protect them and so forth. But number one is, you know, most of these are behavioral, by the way. Number one is don't open email attachments. That's the number one way viruses come to you, is attached files and email. It's not don't open email attachments from somebody you don't know. That's not the rule, because it almost always is from somebody you know. That's how viruses work. We're seeing less of that, by the way, but it's still a problem. If you open email attachments, that's risky. Don't click links on emails. That's number two, and that's because these phishing scams very often use links in emails, but also because, in fact, web-based mail in general HTML mail in general is dangerous because you're looking at a web page, and bad guys can embed stuff in web pages. That's dangerous. So don't click links in email, and frankly, number two, subparagraph one is turn off HTML email. You know, if you're using Outlook, just turn it off. Use text-only email, because HTML email is dangerous, just as the web pages are dangerous. Now, you can protect yourself somewhat with web pages by number three, which is making absolutely sure you download Windows updates and install all critical patches immediately. I'll give you an example. Tuesday, Microsoft shipped 20 patches, three critical patches. They do it every second Tuesday of the month. Some of these patches were for exploits, what they call zero-day exploits, that were already on the net. They were out there like instantly. So you've got to apply these patches right away. So number three is run Windows Update, or if you're a Mac user, run software update. It's just the same for Mac users, by the way. This is not Windows only. It's a little more dangerous in the Windows world, but you know, believe me, it's a good time now to get used to being safe. And patching your system when there's critical patches come out is imperative. That's number three. Run a firewall. And that's because there is one category of attack that doesn't involve your behavior. It involves not being protected. There are viruses, they're called worms, that will invade your system no matter what you do. Even if you do the first three steps, they're still going to invade your system. So it's very important to run a firewall. Now, if you have a router, if you're using high-speed internet and you've got one of those broadband routers, you know, that shares the internet, a Linksys, a D-Link, a Netgear, a Belkin, that's a firewall. Even if it doesn't say so on the box, it's a very good firewall. You're safe. You're protected. That's all you need. In fact, it's superior to a software firewall. But if you don't have one of those, turn on the Windows firewall. On Mac, there's a firewall as well. Turn that on. That just blocks these worms. By the way, these worms do not affect Macs, so it's not as important at this point. Again, let's be prepared. But if you're on Windows, absolutely. In fact, if you put an unpatched version of Windows XP Service Pack 1 unpatched on the net, you will get a worm in under a minute, unless you have the Windows firewall on. So a router is a good choice, probably the best choice, but a firewall is another good choice. So that's number four, is turn on the firewall. And number five is just back up. Please back up your data. If you don't back up, you're going to lose it. Maybe not to a hacker, maybe not to a virus, maybe just to a hard drive that fails, but you're going to lose your data eventually. So just please back it up. I should add a number six, really, and this is for people with teenagers in the house. Be really careful about what you let them download. Or if maybe you're one of those people that uses LimeWire or Kazaa or Nutella or eDonkey, one of these downloading, you know, peer-to-peer file sharing. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that you're downloading here pretends to be music or movies or whatever, but in fact is viruses or spyware. So really, don't download stuff. I think unfortunately, these file sharing networks are very dangerous. You got to be really, really, really careful. You may say, but I've got a great antivirus program. Good for you. I keep it up to date, and I've got a great anti-spyware program. Good for you. That's belt and suspenders. Those are extra, and it's good to have those, but behavior is number one. And I'll tell you why. These viruses spread faster than the antiviruses can put out signature updates. So if you're opening an email with a virus attached, and that is a virus, it's spreading like wildfire through the world. It often spreads faster than 24 hours. And that's faster than the antivirus companies can respond. So you're not protected. So it's good to have antivirus and good to have any spyware, but that's added protection. That's not your first line of defense. Your behavior is your first line of defense. That's really important. I know I've done these before. It's so important to do them. And I just thought for the new guys listening and gals, I just run through this. It's really simple. If you do those five things, six, including that don't download files from strangers, you're going to be safe. Vista or not. Now, it helps to have Vista, just like it helps to have a firewall or helps to have an antivirus. But behavior is what is number one. And it's really hard when it's not just you. You may know this, but when your kids are using the computer or other members of the family who aren't savvy or your mom, that's when it's troublesome. So share this with them. Write it down. We'll put it in the show notes at leo.am. My phone number is 888-8-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Chat room is online, irc.dslextreme.com. The webpage is leo.am. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking high tech with you every weekend right here on this station. So glad to have you aboard. Phone number is 888-8-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. If you want to talk about technology, I would love to talk about it with you. 888-8-ASK-LEO. And tech means everything, not just computers. I mean, it means everything from the internet, MP3 players, cell phones, camcorders, all of that stuff. I want to talk about all of that stuff with you. Laura's on the line from New York, New York. Laura, welcome. I'm Leo Laporte. How you doing?
Nice to speak to you.
Nice to talk to you.
All right. I have a question. I have a Dell Inspiron laptop.
Yes.
And I ordered an Ubuntu CD.
All right. You're going Linux.
Going Linux. What I want to do is I was given a Dell tower that's a few years old. And what I'd like to do is install the Ubuntu on the tower, but run it on my PC. Is that possible to do?
I'm confused. I'm very confused. Sorry. You're installing it on the tower.
Right.
But you want to run it on the laptop?
Correct. Is there a way to connect the tower to the laptop so I can run it on my laptop?
Like a remote access thing.
Exactly.
So you don't want to install it on the laptop for some reason?
Well, I have my XP on the laptop.
You want to keep your XP. I got it. So really what you're saying is, can I use my laptop, keyboard, mouse, and monitor to control the desk, the tower?
Correct, because I do not have the space to get an additional screen and keyboard and so forth.
Yeah, people often do a similar thing with a KVM switch and a standalone desktop monitor and keyboard and mouse. Doing it with a laptop, unfortunately, is... the only way you could do this is with remote access, using something like VNC, which is free, to effectively log into that tower and see it on the screen. And nowadays, especially since you're on a LAN, you're not over the internet, VNC is fast enough probably to give you okay performance. But you're going to see some lag as you move the mouse around. You're going to see some lag as you type and so forth. Because it's going over the network to the tower and back. I don't know of any way. There may be some. In fact, I know there are some PC card solutions that they're expensive. It allow you to use to drive that. It's not practicable. So VNC or remote access is probably the best way for you to do this. I would look at Real VNC, which you can, if you just do a Google for Real VNC, you can find it. It is there's several flavors of VNC. VNC was developed by British Bell Labs and is available free. It's open source. Real VNC is a good starting spot. There are other versions like Tight VNC that some people prefer. In fact, you probably already have it on Ubuntu, so you probably don't need to download anything. And then you'll need a Windows client, obviously. You'll be running it on the server on the desk, on the tower, and the Windows client on the laptop.
Is it possible to install the Ubuntu and do a boot off the laptop?
Yep, and in fact, Ubuntu will do that for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that would be by far the better way to do it. If you have enough hard drive space, you need I would say 4 or 5 gigs minimum.
Well, I have 100 gig on my laptop at the moment.
And there's a lot of free space?
About half.
Yeah, you're fine. because Linux is not nearly as fat as Windows XP. So here's what I would suggest doing. When you get your Ubuntu disk, it'll be what they call a live CD. This is the greatest invention for people who want to try Linux but are a little nervous about it. Boot to that live CD. Linux will run from the CD, not even touching your hard drive. So you can see, and it's important to do this on a laptop especially. You want to make sure it'll work. You want to make sure there's no compatibility issues, that your networking works, particularly Wi-Fi can often be difficult. That all your stuff works, that your video and everything works. Then you know, oh, good, this Ubuntu supports this laptop. If it's an Inspiron, chances are very good it will. Then you'll notice on your desktop there's an icon that says install, and it will give you the option to move data over on your laptop drive, partition it, divide it into two logical drives, and then install Linux onto it, and make a dual boot system. And by far, that's the best way to do it.
That's terrific. I didn't know it had that capability.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's nice. Now, sometimes it has trouble if your hard drive is very full or fragmented because it isn't capable of defragging the drive. The program that they use to partition is kind of primitive. I would defrag your drive before you try it. And occasionally you'll have issues. It's certainly prudent to back up. You would
That's
do
all
that.
I always do.
You would do that. Of course you would.
Yes, I have my Carbonite and my
200
gig backup drive. And
have you tried Carbonite? That's great.
I did, and I actually recommended it to a friend earlier today. Huh. I sent him a link for a 15-day free trial.
Good. Well, listen to the ads because we have a 30-day free trial on the ad. Tell her to use my name, Leo. I'm really pleased to have them as our flagship sponsor as we launch the show because what a neat service it is. It really is great.
Oh, it's unlimited. It's amazing.
Yes.
I mean, $40 a year, you can't beat it.
Yep. Well, thank you for the plug. I'm sure Carbonite thanks you. And yeah, you're going to love Ubuntu. I think the reason that it's a good idea to do this as a dual boot is because eventually you will get rid of XP. I'm not kidding you. Ubuntu is that good.
I can't wait. I they're mailing it to me, and I actually ordered a couple extra to give to friends.
You're a good friend.
I'm looking forward to trying it out.
Laura, you are a geek, aren't you?
You taught me well. You taught me very well.
Thanks, Laura. I really appreciate it.
The Masters magazine in 2000.
Oh, wow. You remember that?
I used to save them, but then they were unuseful after 7 years. So
yeah, it's time to throw those out. Thanks, Laura. It's great to talk to you.
Yes, it was fun. Thank you.
Take care. Leo Laporte, I am the tech. Oh, just cut her off. I'm sorry, Laura. Call back. We'll put you on again. I am the tech guy, and she's talking about I used to write for this. Oh, it was a great idea. It was a Sunday supplement, Access Magazine, in a lot of Sunday papers. You know what they found out? Newsprint's expensive. In fact, Arthur Sulzberger, the guy who publishes the New York Times, was speaking at a conference in Europe last week and raised a furor, said, I think in 5 or 10 years, the New York Times, there will no longer be a print edition. The New York Times, there will no longer be a print edition. For the first time last year, more people read the New York Times online than read the print edition. It's very expensive. Newsprint costs are going up and up and up. Of course, you have to have a truck and deliver it and blah, blah, blah. And as the younger generation comes up and is comfortable with reading their newspapers online, this guy, some people are saying he's crazy. Or is he on the forefront? No print edition of the New York Times in 5 to 10 years? Sergio, Pasadena, welcome. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hi, Sergio.
Hi, Leo. I'm very excited because I'm actually on my way to buy a new laptop, the new toy.
I love this. People listen on the show as they're on their way to buy computers. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Before I do that, I want to get your seal of approval. I think I got a good one because it's reasonably priced at $750.
Oh, wow.
And having an Intel Core Duo.
Excellent.
The only thing that's holding me back really is that a lot of buzz going on between the 32-bit as opposed to the 64-bit processor. Is it really critical for me to go?
You already have it. That's a Core 2 is a 64-bit processor. The question is, do you get the 64-bit operating system?
Uh-huh.
Because you have, in fact, you'd be hard-pressed. I don't think there's any processor on the market, except the really old ones, but I don't think there's any modern processor on the market that's not 64-bit.
The one that I'm planning to get is just the Intel Core Duo, not the Core
that's,
2
that's
Duo.
That's 64-bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But the thing, you know, first of all, let's not get too sold into this 64-bit notion. The only real benefit for most people who have 64-bit processors, and by the way, you'd also have to have 64-bit operating system, is more memory over the 4-gigabyte limit. But I think 4 gigs is an awful lot. I don't think you need more. And in fact, your hardware, regardless of what the operating system and the processor allow, may only be limited to 2. It's very, very common. But 2's plenty.
That's great. Now, is there a difference in features when it comes to running a Vista 32-bit as opposed to a 64-bit edition?
The biggest difference is that much of your hardware and software won't work in 64-bit. You have to get all new drivers, some of which are not yet available. As an experiment, I ran 64-bit Vista on my laptop, and I was able to get all the drivers, so I was able to get everything working. It didn't seem any faster. In fact, in all likelihood, it'd be slightly slower. 64-bit operating systems work with bigger chunks of data, but most of the time when you're working with data, you don't need such a big chunk because, you know, a word processor, you don't need 64 bits. The only time you really see a benefit in 64 bits, as I said, is when you need to address a lot of memory or work in bigger chunks, but I don't think you're going to see much benefit. I think most people should stick with 32-bit Vista. 64-bit is more secure. Microsoft has enforced a couple of benefits in 64-bit that they didn't do in 32-bit, one of which was they insist on signed drivers. You cannot install a driver that's not signed. That it makes a big difference in security. And then it also has this new kernel protection that called PatchGuard that prevents software from modifying the heart of the operating system. Believe it or not, this made Symantec, McAfee, Adobe, and other companies mad because their software relied on modifying the kernel of the operating system. This is not a good idea. Hackers, by the way, can completely get around PatchGuard. It's not hack-proof at all. There was a hack almost immediately announced to get around it. But what really the point of PatchGuard from Microsoft's point of view is to keep Symantec, McAfee, and Adobe and others from modifying the kernel. It's a way of putting, drawing a line in the sand saying, you shall not pass. That's it. No more. And that does really begin a process of making a much more secure operating system. Should you get 64 for that? No. Because everybody I know who tries 64 ends up regretting it because of the hardware and software compatibility issues. There's no real benefit, and there's certainly a lot of negatives to it, so I can't really recommend it. All right. I am Leo Laporte. I'm so glad you're here. 888-8-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, welcoming our new listeners listening in Houston on KPRC Talk Radio 950, in Eau Claire on WMEQ News Talk 880. Welcome to Ridgecrest on KWDJ 1360, and to our friends in Waco, Texas on KBW 1010. Good to have you all, along with our mothership KFI in Los Angeles, and more to come. It is so good to be here. I'm Leo Laporte, and the number is 888-8-ASK-LEO. I wanted to mention a little something my buddy Paul Thurrott came up with. Paul's going to be a regular on the show, by the way. He is our host of our Windows Vista podcast called Windows Weekly. In fact, you're going to hear many of the people who do my Twit podcast network on the show. Steve Gibson and Paul will join us. Steve will talk about security. Paul Thurrott this week, next week. Dick DiBartolo, Mads Mattestrider is our giz whiz. He talks about wacky gadgets. Amber MacArthur has Amber's Web. It's Web 2.0 websites and culture, and she's just great on that stuff. And many more. Home theater. We've got some real experts who are going to stop by each week to talk a little bit about what's going on this week. But Paul responded to something that a lot of people got very worried about when they read in Windows Vista. Seems Microsoft changed the way Vista does its upgrades. In the past, when you bought an upgrade version of Windows XP or Windows 98 or ME, the way it worked is you could, of course, have an existing older version of Windows running. You'd put the installer in and run it and say, I see an older version, and would continue on. Or if you wanted to do what I recommend and many experts recommend, a clean install, that is, format the drive first, and then install Windows. You could also do that. It would just say, well, you know, it's an upgrade version, so let me see the old, show me the disk. And you'd insert the disk and it'd say, okay, fine, and it'd continue. Well, Microsoft really dropped a bombshell just before the Vista launch, saying it would no longer allow you to do a clean install. Microsoft Vista does not perform a clean install of Windows if you're using the upgrade version. In other words, you have to have XP on the drive or Windows 2000 on the drive, and Vista has to see it, and then it can install. Now, we don't recommend that because installing a new operating system on top of an old one is often a recipe for disaster. The best way to install Vista is to install it on a clean drive. Vista doesn't support that if you have the upgrade version, and most people aren't going to buy the full $400 version. They're going to buy the upgrade. Well, fortunately, there is a workaround. In fact, Paul got this from somebody at Microsoft who obviously felt bad about this whole thing. This has freaked a lot of people out. I mean, it is not the record. You know, if you have an existing XP machine and you're trying to install Vista, it is much better to format the drive, you know, back up your data, format the drive, install Vista, than it is to install Vista on top of XP. It just is. It'll work, I guess, but you're going to have problems if you install it on top of XP. So here's what you do. You still format the drive. This will work with a Windows upgrade DVD. You'll still format the drive. So here's what Paul says. Boot your PC with a Windows Vista upgrade DVD. After the preliminary loading screen, click the Install Now button to start the setup. Here's the key. When it asks you for a product key, skip it. Do not. You can still install. This is so that you can try Vista. You get to try it for, I think, 30 days without a product key, without even buying it. So you can install it without the key. So don't enter the key. And install a clean install. Erase the drive, blank drive, no key. And then you deselect the option, by the way, that says automatically activate Windows when I get online. So in effect, you're installing a trial version of Windows. Go ahead and install it. Install the version that you have an upgrade key for, by the way. Don't install, you know, don't, this workaround does not let you buy Home Premium and then install Ultimate. No, you have to install the version that you have a serial number for. Once you do the install, and I'll put a link to this is a fairly long, you know, step by step, but I'll put the link in the show notes to the details. But once you've done the install, you can now activate it. But the way to do it is you install again on top of Vista. Now, the good news is it's not going to take a long time because Vista is smart enough to say, oh, you already have the files and skip all that. You'll install again. And this time you'll enter the product key. And it's fine. In other words, you're upgrading the trial version of Vista, and it's fine. Now, it's a little bit of a loophole. I don't think Microsoft intended this, but it solves this problem, and I think it's a big problem. Because every expert, and I include myself in this, says it's best to install clean, to install on a formatted drive. Now, it also means, and I can't imagine Microsoft's unaware of this, but it also means that you can buy an upgrade edition of Vista even if you're not upgrading from an older version of Windows. So it'd be crazy to buy a full version of Vista ever. I don't think Microsoft's losing any money because how many people aren't actually upgrading from an existing version of Vista? I mean, that's pretty much the way it is. You probably, unless you've been using a Mac your whole life, you probably have a copy of Windows that you purchased at some point, maybe with a new machine, but that you have a legitimate copy. But in fact, there's no reason to buy the full version of Vista. You could just upgrade following this process. You install, don't activate, don't give it a serial number, and then upgrade that installation. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. More of your calls coming up, 888-8-ASK-LEO. I am the tech guy, Leo Laporte. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. So glad to join our Geek Nation coast to coast and have you here on this inaugural journey. Thanks to Rebecca Baker, who is screening calls for us, came over from the KFI show. It's great to have a friendly face in the control room. And at the board, the wonderful Antonia Giordano. And thanks to everybody at the Premier Radio Networks who have just made me feel so welcome. Thanks to you, too, and all our new stations. This is a real treat for me, I have to say. Mac and Hemet, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Matt.
Leo, how are you?
Fantastic.
So, I wish I knew even half of what you were saying.
It'll sink in.
One foot. What's that?
It'll sink in. Just let it absorb.
Oh,
osmosis.
I've got one foot still in the cave when it comes to electronics and computers and whatnot. Hey, and also while I was on hold, I thought of millions of other questions for you, but the one that I gave to your screener when I called, I am guilty of one of your bad behaviors. I LimeWire.
Ah, yeah. Well, a lot of people do. I mean, I'm not. I don't want to make a moral judgment on it. I'm just merely saying it's dangerous.
Right, right. Moral judgment aside, it is, you know, something a lot of us do, and you are right. We do open ourselves up for bad situations.
Yeah.
One of the things I have noticed since I've been doing that is I'll put my computer in hibernation. One, because I don't want to sit and wait for it to start back up. And at any given moment and during the day or the night, the computer will turn itself back on. Even the monitor will pop back on.
Hello.
I'm trying to figure out
Hello.
If there's something that if I caused this, and if so, how can I fix it?
I don't think you caused it. It could be a number of things. It depends a little bit on how it's set to wake. From hibernation is like sleep. The only difference is that it stores the contents of RAM to the hard drive, and by
right.
doing so allows itself to go in an even lower power state, basically an off state. But it starts up faster and right where you left off. But the same things can wake it up. They could wake up a sleeping computer. Errant mouse movement. You have cats?
No, sir.
Sometimes cats.
I have them outside, but that's my neighbor.
Big cats. That's big cats. That's another kind of cat. Yeah, I mean, sometimes a cat jumping on the keyboard, knocking the mouse. You also can in your BIOS, in the setup, when you first turn on the computer, you know, it says press F12, enter setup. Or F2 or escape or delete. In there sometimes are settings to wake on ring. If you've got a modem connected and the phone rings, it'll wake up. That's so you can receive faxes. Sometimes it'll say wake on Ethernet. That's so that a network administrator can wake up computers in a business and operate on them and then go put them back to sleep. So there are a lot of reasons why a computer kind of spontaneously can wake up. I understand what you're saying is you're a little concerned that maybe there's some program on the computer that's saying wake up, and that's not likely.
Okay.
Because in hibernate mode, nothing's running. The only thing that's running in hibernate mode is these little programs that run in BIOS that could, in fact, wake on ring or wake on Ethernet activity, or the little thing that's monitoring the mouse or keyboard. So it's most likely something like that.
Now, my concern with that is I'm not on Ethernet, and I don't have a fax machine.
So there's no way this could be happening.
What's going on here? My wife thinks it's possessed.
It's spooky. You got a ghost in the machine. You know, computers do strange things sometimes. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, to be honest with you.
I can't disagree about the strange things sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, if you made house calls, I'd pay you a lot of money to come fix my computer.
You know, I can't afford to because I would spend the rest of my life just trying to keep up with the people I'd get in the first few weeks.
I have no doubt.
Yeah, I mean that is a big issue. I don't think it's something to worry about. Does it do it like every night?
No, not every night. We'll set to hibernate. You know, kids are all in bed. It gets late. We'll go to bed. And I'll wake up and the computer will be on. So at some point tonight.
You might look and see if you have any like virus scanning software or anything that is set to run on a schedule. That may be able to wake it up as well.
Yeah, that's where my wife comes in. She's very efficient at running all those spyware.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that's running. You should look when it wakes up if it starts doing something.
All right.
See if it's busy getting busy, and you know, and it also could just be that it's just waking up.
Just waking up.
It could be completely, completely anonymous. Unexplained behavior, and sometimes that happens too, Mac. I mean, I wish these things were a little more logical. In theory, they're absolutely deterministic devices. You know, there's no way they can act on their own recognizance. They can't do anything on their own, and they're absolutely causal. You know. A always follows B, and it's true. I'm sure that there's a cause, and they can be very mysterious causes. They can be very deep, and you know sometimes it's not worth the effort to try to figure it out. I would take a look and see what it's doing when it wakes up. That'd be a good clue. You know, hit Control Alt Delete and look at the processes or the programs that are running. See if it's doing something. That could be, you know, a clue to what's going on. Storm, Los Angeles. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Storm.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Although I'm having a few technical problems.
Oh, well. What a surprise.
I just got.
You'd be the first to call me. Yes.
I'm sorry?
You'd be the first to call me with a technical problem.
Yeah, you may not recall 20 years ago was the last time I saw you.
Really?
You and I created the first interface for a Macintosh to print on a sub-$2,000 laser printer.
This is that Storm. Of course. Yeah. I'll be darned. I haven't talked to you in ages.
That's, like I said, it's about 20 years ago before
Holy
you changed
cow.
Your name to avoid processor.
Yeah. You've been chasing me ever since, haven't you, Storm? Well, it's nice to talk to you. Yeah, we go back a ways.
21 years.
Yeah.
And it's been tremendous to see your career go so far as it has, because you're a nice guy.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to hear from you.
Yeah, so I ended up getting fired for having succeeded at that, by the way.
You did?
Yes. The company, the heads of the company so hated Macintoshes and Apple and just California in general. It was a company from Alabama. They got so upset when it actually did work, having insisted it never would.
How can you get fired for making something work? Now, it just baffles me. Amazing.
Yeah. C'est la vie.
Times have changed a little, I think. I hope.
That's why I work for myself now.
Yeah, you're smart. A wise man.
Listen, the couple problems I'm having. First, I have several Airport Expresses, two of them to extend range, one to feed music to my stereo.
Yep.
And I just got the Apple Airport Extreme N.
Yeah, mine just came this week, too.
Yeah, the music still works, but it will no longer even recognize the ones that I've set up.
Yeah, the WDS stops working. You know, I didn't even try to get my WDS working because the range of the new N router is so much better that I didn't really need it. So he's using Airport Expresses, which are the older BG routers from Apple, to hook up to this new N. You probably have to, I don't, you know, will they work? If they will work if the chipsets are compatible. And I didn't even try it, so I don't know if they are. But you will certainly have to set up your WDS all over again. Can you see them?
No. You can see them when you tell the installation assistant that you're going to set them up to share music or stream music. But when you tell it that you're trying to set them up to join the existing network to increase the range.
What that means is that they're not compatible. So WDS, which is what you've been using unwittingly, I think Apple does call it WDS. That's the wireless distribution system. Is an old spec. I mean, really old.
Any workarounds?
I don't know. I mean, you're the first one to raise this issue. I hadn't even tried it. I actually kind of assumed it might not. If they're incompatible chipsets, no, there will not be a workaround. The reason is the WDS spec is very loosely written. And so Broadcom implemented it one way, Ergo implemented it another way, Atheros implemented it. So each chipset was incompatible. It sounds to me like Apple has changed chipsets on their new router. I have not checked. I bet you they're using the Ergo chipset.
So.
And if they're using the Ergo chipset, it's not compatible with their old Broadcom chipset that they used to use.
Well, I'll keep playing with it.
Yeah, let me know, would you, Storm? Because I'd be very curious, and I should try myself. But frankly, it's not a surprise because you do have to have compatible chipsets for the WDS to work.
Well, my other solution, and this is primarily for internal speed, excuse me, when I exchange large files within my offices, is I have a 1 gig switch.
Right.
I cannot find a 1 gig router.
They're out there, but they're very expensive.
Why is it that I don't understand
because
that. You can get 1 gig switches for a dime a dozen, but you want to get a 1 gig router. And
well,
find them.
Because a router is doing more work. It's actually routing, and it has to. The truth is most of these companies assume, well, why would you want to route the internet at a gigabit? So they just figure, oh, you'll buy a cheap router, put that on the gigabit. I use a gigabit network as well to trade files around, but I have a less expensive. Wait a minute. Now, maybe my router is a gigabit. I might have spent the money. I'm trying to remember. But
yeah, I've got a 1 gig switch. It works fine,
yeah.
Except when I'm trying to log in from home with Apple Remote.
I see. Desktop. And you'd like, but see, their internet is nowhere near that speed anyway.
Right.
Right. So that's the
but
main reason.
But you still get into the same system. I've either got to set up a different network to that computer. Or
you can do it. You just have the router be kind of its own 100 segment, 100 base T segment, and it's kind of out there, and the rest are gigabit. It's a separate segment. I don't want to get too much into networking. This is like the old days, Storm.
Right.
It's great to talk to you. I tell you, I am going to actually look into this issue. I did get the new Apple 802.11n router. It came on Wednesday. And I know a lot of people have received it. They ordered it. It's expensive. Apple charges extra for its airports. It's $179. I think you can get a Belkin N for $50 less. Has some advantages. Doesn't have those, my favorite Martian antennas on them, which is nice. It's got a flat antenna inside the box, so it's a very low, beautiful low profile form factor. It's a really pretty little router. Doesn't look like the flying saucer anymore. It is the range definitely increased. In fact, that's one of the reasons I didn't even try my airport. I used to use numerous airport expresses to extend the range of my Wi-Fi router. Don't need it anymore because the N is so much better. Even with my old B machines, it's still, I don't have any dead spots anymore. So that was a huge improvement. I haven't noticed a big speed improvement yet. But again, I'm putting older gear on it as well as N gear. I have one N notebook, my PowerBook, MacBook Pro, I'm sorry. That should be faster, but I think I'd have to turn everything else off to find out. In any event, this technique, this WDS technique, is a great technique for extending Wi-Fi by adding additional relaying routers, but they have to be compatible, often the same make for them to work. It worked fine with Airport and Airport Express. I have a feeling that these new N routers, I'm sure they use a new chipset. That makes sense. They wouldn't work the same. That makes perfect sense. Phone number is 888-827-5536. And I have time for a few more calls in this hour, and I will take them in just a little bit. I am so glad you're here. I hope you're enjoying the show, and I hope you'll stick around and come back again next week and every week. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, taking your calls, talking high tech as I do every weekend right here. And I'm glad you're here, too. 888-8-ASK-LEO. Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to keep those...
Okay, you're on.
Oh my goodness. Will you look at that guy? I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, and you know why my butt is big. I spent a lot of time sitting in front of a computer. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the number. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We only have a few more minutes, but I will keep, if you're on the boards when the show ends, stay on the line, and I will answer all the calls that are still on hold. I won't take any new calls because I don't want to be here all day, but I will continue to answer anybody who's on hold. Don't worry. If you get on hold, I will get to your call. I promise you. 888-8-ASK-LEO is the number. There's podcasts of this show available. Yes, indeed. Absolutely free. You can, if you miss a show, or you'd like to go back, this is my 327th show that we've podcast, so there's plenty of them to listen to. If you've got a little house cleaning to do and you'd like a little tech guy going on in the background there, they're all available at leo.am. You could subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It's one of the top 20 tech podcasts, easy to find. It is also available for just straight old download if you want. From leo.am. That's where the show notes hide and all of that stuff. Absolutely free, no charge for the podcasts. And we have some interesting ideas. We're going to have some fun with the audio. We're going to get underway. Oh, but it's not there yet. The feed, by the way, and there was some confusion. I wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen to the existing podcast feed. Will stay the same. There will always be a show on there, so you'll always be able to hear it that way. But you may want to look at some of the other feeds once we set them up, because there are going to be some new ways to listen to the show. Bill in Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hiya, Leo. Hey, Leo, I'm fighting with remote desktop.
Fighting, huh? Are you winning?
Last resort.
Uh-oh. It doesn't sound like you're winning.
Yes, no, yes.
Okay.
That's the answer to your question. Number one,
yes.
In my classroom, I can deal with a computer in my classroom from my laptop with a remote desktop. That
okay.
works.
Okay.
At home, inside my network, I can go from my laptop to
sure
my
you can. It's
computer.
The router that's getting in the way.
Yeah.
Because
but
remote.
I've already done the thing I think you're going to tell me.
Well, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but that's what's getting in the way. If you can use remote desktop on a LAN, inside a LAN, which is what you're doing at home and in the classroom, it's working fine. The problem is when you try to go out and use the real world internet. And the reason, I mean, that's why a router, you've heard me say it before, is a good firewall. It's blocking unexpected incoming traffic. It's like a valve, one-way valve. If you go out, it's fine. But when unexpected traffic comes in, it says, I don't know what this is. I didn't ask for this. Go away. So here's the thing. You can get out. Let's say you're trying to get your classroom from home. So you've got remote access running as a host in the classroom, and you've got remote access running as a client at home. You can go out, that client will go out through your router, no problem. But as soon as it gets to the school's router says, well, I didn't ask for you. What are you doing here? And it just drops the packet. Same thing, vice versa. So what you've done is you've punched a hole in that router, probably.
Right.
Sometimes they call it port forwarding, where you punch a hole in the firewall and say, okay, if this guy comes in, route it to this machine. It probably isn't just one or two ports. One way to test this is to DMZ the computer. Do you know what that is?
I do.
Yeah.
But have you... Tell everybody.
You're a good teacher. I can tell. I know exactly what you're talking about, but just so everyone else understands. So you can, on almost all routers, if you can't figure out which ports have to be opened. See, port forwarding says, look, when unrequested traffic comes to this port, and every kind of internet traffic uses a port. The web uses port 80, FTP uses port 21. They all use a port. It's a socket, a connection. When unexpected traffic comes in on whatever that port is, 10,000, would you do me a favor and send it to this computer because he's looking for that? That's port forwarding. But you've got to forward every port. You've got to make sure they're all open. And sometimes that's tricky. You have to choose between two protocols, TCP or UDP. You've got to get the right one. It can be tricky. The best way to test, maybe you don't want to do this permanently, but the best way to test is to take a machine and put it in what they call a DMZ outside the router. It's completely unprotected. Any traffic that comes in goes to that computer. Now, that's clearly an insecure place to be long term, but it's a good way to test. So you'll do this in the router settings. You might have to do it. Do you have access to the school's router?
Actually, they do not have
there's something
remote desktop port closed off at all.
Yeah, but
I'm going through them to get to my home router.
Yeah, but see, that's an outgoing port. So the outgoing always works. It's incoming that's the problem. You can make the connection from the school. It's connecting the other way that doesn't work, right? And that's the way a router works. Now, because it's an institution, you may not have the ability to say, please DMZ me.
I don't have that. I presume the issue was getting moving up
no.
to the link.
No, no, it's in. So remember, it's easy to remember this if you think of a router as a valve that allows outbound but not incoming. Once you've established a connection, it's a conversation, and then the router says, "Oh yeah, you're already talking. That's fine." It's only that you can't establish a connection that never existed before, and that's the problem. And this is a common problem. DMZing is kind of the shortcut. Good luck with that one. Tell you what, I'm going to keep those. We've got four calls. Hang on. I will talk to you all. For those of you who are about to leave me, don't worry. I'll be back. And I hope you'll join me next time. I'm here every weekend right on this great station. And you can find more on my podcast network, twit.tv, TWIT.TV. Lots of great stuff, including this show. And, of course, leo.am is the home to the show notes, our chat room, and a lot more. I just have had a great time. We survived, huh? I had lost my voice this week, and I was hoping it would come back in time. And as you might have noticed, it did. We'll do this again next time, shall we? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Thanks to Rebecca and Antonia. Thanks to you for being here. I'll see you next time. I am the Tech Guy.
Woo!
We did it, baby.
Yeah. Hi, Leo Laporte. We talk about it backup all the time, but does
Thank
anybody
you so
really
much.
Do it? Just think what you'd...
Leo, I was listening in the other room the last hour, and you sounded just like you were on KFI. There was no difference.
I'm a little nervous, but I feel like we made it. Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it.
No difference in your delivery whatsoever. Mm. You sounded just as good as you do on KFI.
Thank you.
No matter what happens...
Excellent show. If you need to send us anything, send it to Trevor or send it to
me at
premierradio.com, and we'll get it in the system for you.
Excellent. What I'm going to do is get a new cut of that bumper that's got a 15-second, that's got the beginning and then a 15-second end, and then you can put the sting, the network signal right after the sting, and I'll send that to you in the next couple of days.
Sounds perfect.
In fact, if I can, I'm going to get him to do it today, and we'll send it. Well, it's probably too late for today, for tomorrow, but we'll do it for next week.
Carbonite.com.
All right. Enjoy your offline recording. And
thank you.
I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for being here, Steve. I really appreciate your help.
Okay, Leo. Bye-bye.
So I guess the way I'll record this is I'll have a pause in between each one, so each call is kind of discreet, because I'm not going to time it. I don't know that you'll have to edit for time. But I'll try to keep them all at about 5 minutes.
Leo, you've got two calls. Did you need any more?
Okay? No, don't take any more. I'll just take the two. The idea is if you were on hold, I'll take you, but no new ones. I can't read this line one that's on hold. What's the name of the line one person? This software is weird.
Can you see it's Kathy in Temecula on line one?
All right, I will take her first. Just tell me when you got the CD ready.
Okay, I am ready whenever you are.
All right, here we go. So, for those of you who are still on hold, I have a couple of calls, and I'm going to take both of you, so don't go away. I'm going to start with Kathy. So, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Kathy is on the line from Temecula. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you. I have a question about a website that I'm trying to visit. My son's school has links where you can get forms and things like that by clicking on a little highlighted word all mm-hmm. over the page.
Uh-huh.
When I do that, it returns to the home page. When I do it from work, it goes there.
Oh, that's weird.
I put it as a trusted site. I made pop-ups okay on my home computer. I did it at Kinkle's and I did it at work. So it's obviously my computer at home.
It's something going on at home. And it goes back to the home page of the school site, or it goes back to your home page?
The school site.
Wow.
It's almost like hitting refresh. It just comes right back to the same URL, the same information, and I can't access any of the links on that page.
When you hover over the link, and you know you have your status bar at the bottom of the browser,
uh-huh.
Is it a JavaScript link? Does it say JavaScript and on click or something like that?
No, I am not at home on it.
You're not at home.
Positive.
Yeah.
No.
There are different kinds of links, obviously.
Right.
You can have an http://www, you know, a link to a...
Right, that's what it says. I tried cutting and pasting, being really fast, and I went to properties, and I tried to copy the HTTP to get the different URL for it.
Yeah.
And I obviously wasn't fast enough. A window can pop up when I do properties, but if I try to copy it...
Well, you know, you can always right-click on the link. And copy the link, and then paste that link in, and that might be a worthwhile enterprise. If it's a straight http://web page,
yes, it is. I think
that's a little odd. I mean, it sounds more likely that it's a script. Now, this is very common on websites; they'll have a script run when you click a link. It looks, for all intents and purposes, just like a regular link, but in that case, it wouldn't be unusual for your security software to be stopping it.
Okay.
So the thing is to see what that full length, the link may look like it's a normal link and then go on. What security software are you running?
McAfee.
Okay. And is it just the McAfee antivirus, or is it the McAfee security suite?
It's the antivirus.
Okay. The antivirus by itself shouldn't be doing anything. If you have full security software, it might well be.
Well, it's because when I do it on other pages, I visit, I surf all the time, and it works.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but it's something on that. But it's something on that link. Is that supposed to be a pop-up?
It's no. It takes you actually to a different screen. Some of it takes you to like an Adobe PDF file for like your athletic documents. Some will take you to the theater site where you can order tickets.
But it's not always the same, and it doesn't work on any of them.
None of them.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see if it was all PDF documents, well, then, you know, there's something going on with your launching PDF documents.
Right.
In fact, if the link were the same each time, then you could, then I would say, oh, yeah, okay, well, see, there's a, Internet Explorer, Firefox, what browser?
I beg your pardon?
What browser are you using? You're probably using Internet Explorer. Yeah, Explorer. There's a, believe it or not, in Windows, the way a link works, there's a DLL that gets launched, that's run, that tells it what to do when you click a link. That can be unregistered or damaged or not properly associated with links, and that could cause link problems. But it sounds like everything else except this page is working.
Right. I've never experienced any other problems like this. And I thought it was the page when I first went on it. And then I tried it at work, and lo and behold, it worked. And I was at Kinko's, and I, out of curiosity, hopped on, and it worked perfectly.
Give me the URL so I can try it. All right, so she's given me the school site off, you know, aside, so nobody knows. I don't want to say it on the air. And then what link do I link in this school site to go to this page that's causing you so much
woe? When you go to the school site, try boosters right there. That would open up a window that you could scroll and read all the current information. Or wardrobe. Or the theater ticket then the corner.
So none of these are... Okay, I'm clicking wardrobe here. Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, they're doing something very fancy. You tell them to stop it. I see. Yeah, absolutely. This is a... Those are all PDFs.
They're How about the fools? How about the play? If you wanted to buy tickets for the play, you click on the lower right. They have a little...
Fools. I see fools.
Yes. Okay,
that's a stand. That should work for you. Does that not work either?
No.
Because that's a standard page link.
Okay,
but see, some of these are not. Some of these are PDFs. And they're a little, and they're a little, the way they work, they open an inline frame. They're doing some weird stuff. I'll tell you, do you know the webmaster or do they buy this software from somebody?
My son is in the computer class with the webmaster, so I have access to him. It's a thing.
Here's what they're doing. I'm going to tell you, I've looked at it now and I know what they're doing. They're doing something called an iframe.
Okay.
An iframe does have potential risks. Okay. And your security software is preventing it. Because this is a common hack attack, it's called a cross browser scripting flaw.
Cross browser scripting.
Yeah,
No,
they're not doing it, but your security software is blocking cross browser scripting.
Okay.
For this reason, because it's potentially dangerous, so it's very clever what they're doing. Every link that you've talked about opens an iframe, which is a little box inside the page that kind of. Is a new page inside there.
Right.
That is an iframe, and it is a potential security. It isn't really a security hazard. It's not commonly done on the net. I've seen it done. I've done it. I don't recommend it for this exact reason.
Okay.
So it is either pop-up blocking software or security software of some kind that is only on your home computer. Your instincts are absolutely right. It's local to your home computer. And as for fixing it, well, there's a couple of things. You could probably figure it out, but if you're having this problem, you know, and change your settings, others are having this problem. My recommendation is how good is your son's grade in this class? Okay, he can't do it. Okay. My recommendation would be to the webmaster to rethink his strategy.
Okay, well, that's actually, apparently they're young, really cool guys, graduate from the high school that are doing the class. So throwing them something out at them, I don't have a problem with. What direction would I
just suggest? Say, guys, your iframes are, here's the geek talk.
Okay,
you just come in and you look like you know what you're talking about. And you say, guys, your iframes are breaking my browser.
Okay.
I would say it's not a good idea to use iframes.
Okay.
And then leave quickly before they ask you any questions.
Yes, before I say, wait, let me call 888.
Yeah, but that's what's going on. It is an unusual technique. It is opening a browser within a browser, kind of. And it is a commonly used hack attack. You do have security software on your system that's preventing it. You could try to fix it by changing your security software. My suggestion is you're not the only one that's going to have problems with this. They should probably rethink this.
All right. If I were to go into my settings of my security, would I look up the hack? What would be the keyword that I would look for?
It could be, say, turn off iframes. It could be saying the hack that they're trying to avoid is cross browser scripting flaws.
Right, I wrote that down.
So it could say something about that. It could have to do with their pop up blocking. It's kind of like a pop up, but it's not.
Right. Because my pop ups, I did pop ups okay, and like I said, I trusted sites and all that, and it didn't make a difference.
Yeah, you could try churning this. There's two places to look at this. You could look at Windows' own security and turn the security all the way down in the internet options, and just for this page, to see if that fixes it. And then you can look at McAfee, but I think it's more likely McAfee.
All right. Thank you so much. This will be fun to see what the guys say.
Guys, your iframes are breaking my browser. Stop it.
I got it.
All right, Kathy. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's move on. We've got another call on hold. This is Cassandra. Here we go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Cassandra's on the line from Queens. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello, Leo.
I love Queens. How are things in Queens? Has the snow gone?
No. And you wouldn't believe this. The last time I spoke to you was December of 2003.
I said the same thing then.
Yeah.
I am a very limited person. I only have a few choices. I'm actually a bot.
No, you're not.
What can I do for you, Cassandra?
Okay, I had WinFax 10.02, and I've had it for 6 years.
Oh, my. You are an older person. An oldie but goodie. WinFax.
I like it.
Haven't heard that name in a long time.
But now we come up with a problem.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, the incoming faxes won't come in. I can send out with no problem.
So you have a fax modem.
Yes.
Do you like doing it this way?
It helps in some things.
Okay.
I have a regular standalone fax machine.
Yeah. I don't know if they've... I mean, the company that made WinFax is I think, long gone. Unless somebody's...
It's Symantec.
Oh, Symantec bought it. That's right. Do they still support it?
No, they don't support it.
Yeah. Well, same thing.
I
It's long gone. Yeah. there are fax programs out there, but, I think most people have stopped using their fax modems. I know what you'd like is a software program that you could install to replace WinFax. I'll have to look and see if I can find one, because I don't know of any. Can I make a...
Well, this is what happens I do.
Okay.
When I get some faxes coming through that fax program,
mm-hmm.
I have the choice of either I can print it or I can make it a PDF.
Right.
So I like the option of doing that.
Yeah.
That's where I like to keep the program.
Mighty Fax is still around.
Mighty Fax?
Mighty Fax. Do a Google for Mighty Fax, one word.
Okay.
It's $20. It's cheap, but they have a 30-day trial, so you could try it. Boy, it's funny. This is like bringing back memories because people don't do this anymore. You're very old fashioned.
I know. I went looking in the stores. You can't.
Mighty Fax is fine.
Online.
Mighty Fax is fine. I'll tell you what I use because I don't want to have to leave my computer on so that it can receive faxes. I don't want to dedicate a phone line to it. Do you use your modem to get online anymore?
No.
So you don't really. You'd like to get rid of this thing. I think I use eFax, which is an online only. Now what happens is faxes come to me as in my email. They're already a file. I could print it if I want, but usually I just keep it on the computer. You can convert them to PDF if you want PDF. You can convert them to PDF. It also allows you to send faxes either via email or through a web interface.
Now, how about scanning? Because I like to scan things in and send them out.
Well, you had to do that before, didn't you? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that doesn't change.
I scan them into the software.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with eFax. If you have a file, if it's a PDF or a doc or a scanned image or anything, you send it via email or via the web. That's the same. The thing I like about now the drawback is it's not cheap. It's like $10 a month. The thing I like about it is really convenient. I haven't had a curly little piece of fax paper in my hand in years. And it sounds like you're moving that way anyway with your converting them to PDF.
Yeah, well, it was
like paper taking up a lot of space. I had like, you know, yeah. EOBs from GHI.
Yeah.
I turned all of that into PDFs.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll tell you, if you still want to kind of do the WinFax style faxing, Mighty Fax is still around. Amazing.
Okay.
And it's cheap. It'd be a lot cheaper than eFax. And if you don't do a lot of faxes, it's probably the most economical way. But if you'd like to disconnect the phone from the computer, you know, and start, and you know, kind of enter the 21st century, then I'm sorry, I'm being really mean to you. You don't deserve it, Cassandra. It's only because you're an old friend. EFX is just great. It's just expensive in terms of, you know, it's $10 a month. That adds up. There are free fax solutions like EFX, and I've yet to find one that I'm happy with. There's two ways to do it. Mighty Fax, and then eventually EFX. You know, Windows has built-in faxing, and it's just, it's not easy to use. I think one of the reasons that WinFax is gone is because Microsoft just put it into, I mean, there's a stripped-down version of WinFax in Windows.
I tried the one in Windows.
It doesn't work. Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. So you'll still have to use your scanner software standalone with EFX. It doesn't have built-in scanning capability.
Okay.
Mighty Fax, I think, does.
I probably can't get away from that.
Yeah, go to Mighty Fax. It's fine. I mean, it's still, I mean, there's, you know, they've been around for years.
And they won't stop supporting.
Well, I'm not promising anything that way.
<Let's> hope not.
But, you know, because they're the last man standing, highly likely that there's still enough money in this business, you know, to stick around. You just hope that they stick around a little longer.
Yeah, we hope.
Life is like that. Sometimes it forces you to change. I'm with you. I don't. If it works, why change? I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, I did everything I could. I reinstalled Windows. Right. I reformed my hard drive. I reinstalled the software.
It just
has that bug to it.
Yeah, it was always a little buggy. The other thing a lot of people have done is they've gone to all-in-one printers that have built-in faxing.
I have that too. You helped me with that.
Oh, well, why aren't you using that?
2003.
Well, why aren't you using that?
Because I had a parallel printer. And I wanted to do parallel to USB.
I see.
And I was looking for a cable for that.
I got it. I remember that.
And eventually I just got an all-in-one.
You gave up. Yeah. Well, the all-in-one will do faxing in many cases.
Yeah, but then everything stays inside the printer and you can't see it.
Oh, all right. Mighty Fax. $20. I should have just said that. Cassandra, I'll talk to you in 4 years, okay?
Okay.
Or sooner if you have a question. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Take care. And that's it.
Okay, a couple things I'd like to do before we disconnect.
Yes, of course.
George came in, and he says that he thinks it's if you push, like, F1 on your computer, that will pick up line 1.
Ah.
And he thinks that either Control F1 or Shift F1 would put it on hold.
Excellent. Let's see. Should I try it?
Yeah, don't try on 1 because
somebody's calling.
Maybe try on.
So let's pick up line 2. That worked. And let's do Shift F2. Oh, baby!
Oh!
Now, one other thing I noticed is I'm hearing echo on every call. Is that?
You know, I'm seeing that too.
Is that me?
No, I'm seeing our program too. Looks really, really high feeding back to you.
Okay,
tomorrow I'll just have Antonio run things a little softer going back to you.
Okay.
And see if that works itself out.
You don't, you know, so you're sending me mixed minus. I hear myself because I'm listening to my send.
You're hearing yourself come back on the phone line.
But I'm hearing myself also come back on the phone line. I don't know if it's just me or the caller as well, but I am hearing echo. Yeah.
You're hearing yourself from your extreme, plus you're hearing, when the caller's potted up, you're hearing yourself back.
Got
it. If the caller's not potted up, you're not hearing yourself, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. That's what it is.
But you don't. You can send me pure mix minus, because I do have my own
mixes. Actually, I am sending you nothing but...
Oh, so something else is going on.
Yeah. I guess the calls are just really, really hot or something.
Okay.
Very strange.
That's
I'll mention that to engineering.
I can't believe this all worked, and I only said KFI once. And I didn't even say KFI, I said KF.
Yeah. Wow. One and a half.
Yeah.
You got a full KFI out there and you didn't even realize.
When did I do that?
It was in, I think, the last hour.
Somebody said that in the chat room and I didn't believe them.
Yeah.
Damn.
Leo, I'm going to give you a call on your phone. Is that
I'm
okay?
Here.
I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Antonio.
Thank you.
Okay. We will talk to you tomorrow, I guess.
Tomorrow. And I should be.
They will.
I should come down by then. Yes, you don't need to come in, Steve. Take the day off.
Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks. I'll drop you now. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.